On Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it in the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk about the big wedding with our friend Dave Johnson over at the Campaign for America's Future. Also, Ian Millhiser from Think Progress going to be here talking about the AT&T decision and a couple other things that I've got on my mind. Also in the second hour, Ray McGovern, former senior CIA analyst and co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, going to be here talking about General Petraeus going to be this new CIA director. I'm a little uncomfortable with that. I've got to be honest, a little uncomfortable with that. And we'll see what Ray McGovern has to say about it. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Today, back in 1894, a moment in history that I've asked for a number of times to be repeated. This is the day when Jacob Coxey, and his 500 unemployed Civil War veteran friends began their march. They began the march from Massillon, Ohio, right through Pennsylvania, through Maryland, and they set up camp just outside of Washington, D.C. Just like those days, we're in economic problems. They were in the middle of the Great Panic of 1893, much like the Bush Panic, much like the Bush collapse, much like that. I mean, stop and think of how many jobs we lost after September of 2008. Stop and think of how much employment just disappeared because of what happened by allowing the bankers and the Wall Street criminals to run unfettered, just to run free, to follow their vices and to pocket whatever they could. And they love to say, well, you know, it's those unions or it's those greedy old people. No. It's these people who thought they were smarter than everybody else. They could game the system, you know, just like the guy who wrote a piece in the newspaper right before the September collapse of 2008. And a guy wrote back to me and said, what you don't understand is wealth is infinite. It's infinite. It can continue to grow. Which I found to be very ridiculous. This idea that it's infinite, never stops. We can keep building this big house of cards. And it's never going to collapse. The party's never going to end. The alcohol's never going to stop flowing. The music's never going to stop. The girls are never going to stop twirling. It's never going to end. The big party is forever. It's infinite. It's always. And then the collapse happened. Wall Street was in a free fall. And where did they turn? Not to the people who threw the party. Not to the people who enjoyed the party. Not to the people who... who had the hangovers, as Bush said. You know, we got drunk. Got a little drunk. drunk on Wall Street. No, they didn't pay for it. You and I paid for it, like everything else that goes on. The people who work for a living, the ones who have to clean up after the party, were the ones who get to pay for it. And again, we've done that. So today, you know, back in 1894 with Jacob Coxey and his 500 unemployed Civil War veterans, they said, we've had enough. We want something to be done. We want our government to stand up and do something for us for a change. And I'm still calling for that. We should be having massive public works programs. We should be rebuilding every road and bridge and rail line in this country. But what did we do back in 2009 when President Obama wanted the stimulus package? What did we do? We said, oh, tax cuts. Yeah, let's give out tax cuts. Somehow that's going to magically, as it never has in the past, because we've tried it again and again and again and again. We've given to the criminals on Wall Street. We've given to the investor class. We've given and given some more. In fact, we've given to the point to where they now tell us we're broke. We don't have any more money for education. We don't have money for health care. We don't have any money for that. We're broke. But we can still give money to them. I mean, I'm tongue-tied. You look at the Ryan budget, man, and it's still calling for more tax cuts for the wealthy, more tax cuts for corporations, and deep, painful, drastic cuts to social programs that help support the middle class. And do you think that these people are going to help us rebuild our infrastructure? No, because they don't see beyond the tip of their nose. They really don't. And you look at these guys, I can only say that they really don't care about this country. All they see is short-term campaign donations. At least that's how I see it. So when we're talking about these deep, drastic cuts, when we're talking about ending education, when we're talking about ending this Medicare system that so many people have benefited from, just like my grandmother, and I talked about it last night. You know, she's in the hospital right now. With that voucher, who would cover her? Nobody. She's got a list of problems pages long. You were going to hand her a piece of paper with, here's a couple grand. Go out into that private market and find something to cover you. She gets by. She's got a Social Security. She's got a little bit of pension from the place that she works. She got a little bit of savings. She got that three-legged stool going on. She's doing all right. But she couldn't afford to pay thousands of dollars a year for health care. She can't afford to pay tens of thousands of dollars a year for treatment. What does it say about us as a society? So as we look across the pond, the big wedding today, thousands of people out, tens of thousands of people out to celebrate this grand wedding. I'm saying, why can't we get thousands of people out into the streets to say, you know what? Let's support family values. Let's support American workers. Let's support this country. Isn't that a worthy cause, just as worthy as a couple of kids getting married? I think so. And you look at the $68 million they spent on that, on the wedding there. Could we not have spent $68 million a little bit better? I can't say. Not my much, theirs. I know here in this country I could figure out a way to spend $68 million a lot better. So later on in the program, we're going to talk with Dave Johnson about the big wedding. How did you watch it, Jake? Did you get to see any of the big festivities, the dress and the flowers and the?
I know last night the coverage was just incessant. Kind of irritated me, quite frankly.
You know, here's what really irritates me. I'm told CNN sent 50 representatives. Fox sent a bunch of people. All of the networks sent a bunch of people. We've sent them all the way across the pond, all the way over to London, all the way over there. Yeah, we couldn't get but a handful of local reporters in Wisconsin. CNN, I don't think, sent anybody. And I still love that sign I saw in Wisconsin that said, you know, thank you, CNN, for telling me what's on Twitter, because that's basically what their reporting of the largest worker uprising in my lifetime was. But yet, two people get married across the pond, way, very little to do with what's going on here at home. They send 50 people. CNN sends 50 people. Fox sends a bunch of people. Somehow that's important news. But yet, 150,000 people taking to the street in Madison, Wisconsin, that wasn't all that important. And we can just take the feed off of Twitter. And yeah, well, I mean, does that bother you?
Yes, it does. That's just as bad as some of the popular shows on TV, Rick. We have all these problems, and what do people watch? Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, well.
And the Donald's program, where he fires people, and somehow that's entertaining to people. Of course, you have famous people that he fires. I understand it.
You know, I understand. I understand distraction. I understand sometimes, you know, you need to sit back and let your mind just clear. I get that. Sometimes you need that. But not in my news. When I want news, I want actual facts. I want actual news. I want what's going on. I don't really care about nonsense. And I know so many people, and you can tell me I'm wrong with the big wedding, not all that thrilled about. But if you listen to the local talk programs in this area, it's the biggest thing in the world that President Obama didn't get to go. It's because, you know, they don't like him because he's losing, you know, he's a shame to America.
No,
it's because he gave that iPod with all of his speeches on it to the Queen, which you go, his speeches weren't on it, dimwits. But over and over, you keep hearing it time and time again, regurgitated ad nauseum. And it's amazing to me how well they've been trained in a very Pavlovian way. Okay, next caller, go ahead. Obama's a socialist. Great, right on, yeah. One after the other. It was amazing. And this is why I don't listen to that stuff. Occasionally, you know, I have been going back and forth to work, but I don't know how people can listen to that.
Well, the latest charge from the right today was that the British are angry at him because I believe the British government gave him a bust of Winston Churchill. And he, because of some of the things that happened in Kenya with the British, he wasn't too keen on it, and they took that as an insult. I don't know about that. I mean, I understand why perhaps he could have a little reservation about the British at times, but that doesn't make him unpresidential.
I loved the one guy called in and said he goes, well, the British help us win. Kind of the other way around. We kind of saved them, if you remember. They were pretty much done.
Kind of like, do they forget Lend-Lease? You know, but before the war, we were technically violating our own laws by behind the scenes.
Sending them
FDR,
weapons.
We were sending them weapons. Supposedly they weren't weapons, but we all know they were.
Yep. But anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about today on the program. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, the royal wedding. I know my wife sat up all morning with her box of tissues and the whole, you know, watching the whole thing, blow-by-blow kind of thing going on there. My poor children. We're right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Milwaukee, Wisconsin will be the epicenter of May Day rallies expected to draw hundreds of thousands of people nationwide this weekend. Workers from all walks of life in America will join in solidarity from California to Wisconsin and beyond, rallying and marching with progressive allies commemorating the legacy of May Day. It will be a protest against the assaults on worker rights and a call to fix America's broken immigration system. Students and churches are joining workers and political progressives in the rallies. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka will join the Milwaukee rally Sunday, ground zero for the defense of worker rights. Trumka says this year all working people are standing strong together to show the world that the fights for worker rights and immigrant rights are cut of the same cloth. Trumka says working people will speak with one voice on May Day. to fight for better wages and benefits, job security, and safer workplaces for everybody. Pennsylvania's governor is highly unpopular in the wake of his budget-cutting moves. Jesse Russell reports.
Newly elected Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett received low marks in a recently released Quinnipiac University poll. Corbett only has a job approval rating of 39% in the Keystone State. The drag on his poll number seems to come from the way he's addressing the budget. 50% of those polled says his proposals are unfair. The poll was released on the same day it was announced that due to budget cuts, the city of Philadelphia will need to slash 3,820 school employees, including 12% of educators. Corbett wants to slash $1.1 billion in education spending, with $292 million of that spending coming from Philly. Overall, the Philadelphia School District will have a $620 million budget gap. In addition to the cuts being made to staff, Philadelphia will see an end to full-day kindergarten, drastic cuts to many vocational, music, and athletic programs, and a 20% reduction in services for English language learners. Transportation is expected to be cut nearly in half, with a 44% decrease in that budget. The school district says it will only provide busing for students there are required to bus by law.
Thousands of motorcyclists are expected to bring their bikes to Wisconsin's Capitol in a thunderous show of solidarity for workers' rights. Thunder around the Rotunda will happen rain or shine between 2 and 5 p.m. Central Time in Madison this Saturday, April 30th. The rally is endorsed by Madison Teachers, Inc., the AFL-CIO, United Steelworkers, AFSCME, and SEIU, Iron Workers, Local 8, and SEIU. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and by the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, my wife, she's going to be happy, since it seems we have to talk about today's main distraction. Two very well-to-do people got married. $68 million on a wedding. When the country over there across the pond is talking about major cutbacks in social programs. I got to be honest, sounds kind of cruel to me. That's why I've asked Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future to come talk to us a little bit about the royal wedding of austerity and trade deficits that's killing our economy. Dave, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me on. By the way, my wife is British, so.
Hey. But so did you?
She didn't watch the wedding, and all her friends in England are writing back saying, what is going on? Why are all these people going nuts? None of them watched the wedding.
Nobody watched it?
Right.
Spent
that noise you hear in the background is my wife playing solitaire, and every now and then it goes, wah, wah, wah. So she's trying to console herself with that. How much did you say? $68
million? $68 million is what they spent on it.
Oh, man.
Because I was.
Well, anyway, I wrote this thing about I loved having that name on it, the royal wedding of austerity and trade deficits. I like that.
That's good.
Yeah. And here's what's going on is that we've got, you know, everywhere you look now, they're talking about deficits. You know, that's the current big scare. And, I mean, you know how these things work. They get everybody all whipped up into a frenzy that some terrible thing's going to happen. You know, I guess the best model of that is probably the Iraq War, where everybody's all terrified, and if we don't do something quickly, and then they come in with their solutions, you know, and their solutions are always going to be cut taxes and give more stuff to the rich. But,
yep.
You know, in fact, we were talking about the same thing with the state budgets. Remember how they got everybody worked into this frenzy about pensions, state public employee pensions, and oh my god, and everybody's running around scared, what are we going to do, and oh, hey, you know what we need to do? We need to cut state public employee pensions. And now it's the federal budget deficit, which, if you remember, I guess it's been a while now, but there was a guy named Bill Clinton who was president, and he raised taxes, and guess what? We didn't have any more budget deficit, and we were paying off the debt. So all the people now who are running around screaming about budget deficits said, oh, God, we can't pay off the debt. It'll be terrible for the economy if we pay off the debt. So they had to cut taxes. So here we are. And then how long ago was it? It wasn't very long ago that we just went through that again, and they kept that Bush tax cut in place. And, I mean, it was literally 1 minute later after they kept the Bush tax cut in place that they turned around and they were yelling, deficit, 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 oh, my God. So here we are.
Although the whole Chicken Little, the sky is falling. And if you remember, back before Bush took office, you had Alan Greenspan, the Fed chairman at the time, going, we don't know what we're going to do. We're going to pay the debt off so fast that we have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so the projections for the future were so rosy.
Yeah. So now they're saying that the deficits, that if we spend more money, we have to cut back on government spending, okay? Well, here's the problem. It's also known to in economics as a contractionary policy.
Right.
And if you look at England, look at Ireland, look at Greece, it wasn't long ago that they all did the same thing, only they beat us to it, and they started what's called austerity. And so they started doing all these cutbacks, and they said, that's going to make our economies boom. Well, guess what happened? Their economies are, like, you know, going back into recession really fast, and they're going back into recession because of the cutbacks. Now, look at what happened this week. This post we're talking about was in response to the GDP growth number that came out this week. And the first estimate of the GDP growth in the last quarter, it was way down to 1.8%.
Right.
Now, in that post, and it's at ourfuture.org, I have some charts that show pretty clearly what actually happens with government spending and when government spending is withdrawn, because we did some government spending. It was called the stimulus. And those charts show so clearly that we were in a free fall of jobs, if you remember.
I do. I just talked about it.
Yeah. We were losing up to almost a million jobs a month at one point. I think it was 600,000 or something. And in January of 2009, Obama comes into office, and go look at that chart and look what happened. As soon as they passed that stimulus and started spending that money, you see that the chart, all of a sudden we're not losing as many jobs and we're losing less jobs. And every month we're losing fewer and fewer jobs until it climbs back. And it's just almost the straight line up of the jobs not coming back, but the loss of jobs. That's everybody's got to remember that everybody was losing their jobs and we stopped that. And we went up to now we're gaining, you know, not enough jobs, not enough jobs to start hiring people back, but at least we're not going behind the number of new people that come into the labor market every month. We've actually gotten to where we're not losing jobs, we're gaining jobs, but it leveled off.
Right.
So you can see on that chart the effect of the stimulus as you see this line going straight up, and then you see the effect of the stimulus wearing off, and it levels out. And then there's another chart, and that shows manufacturing. Same thing, same month, January of 2009, when Obama takes office, you see everything start to turn around after that. You see the effect of the stimulus, that government spending, and then you see what happens when the stimulus stopped and everything leveled off. So here we are talking about cutting back spending. So the only thing that can happen, if that's what we go and we go back to that, obviously, is that it's going to be a contractionary policy is going to force a contraction. So, and then the second part of that, and we could talk about that too, is trade, but I figured I'd let you get a word in. It's your show.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks. But, you know, I invite you on to share your stories with us because I think they're fascinating. But the reality is you're right. Right after the Bush recession started, November of 08, we lost 333,000. December, we lost over 630,000. January, we lost 741,000. Before, you know, Obama had a chance to do anything, February we lost 681,000, massive job losses. And then when the policies, as you pointed out, once the Recovery Act started to kick in, which I think was too small, and we directed too much money to tax cuts when we should have been putting it into direct spending, you start seeing the job numbers, leveling off.
We could have fixed this and that's what his economists were saying. That's what everybody was saying. We needed a good $1.2 trillion of direct spending. Instead, we got, I think it was 800-something billion, and a third of that went to tax cuts, which really don't do much. So But even that, you can see on those charts, and there's every other chart you look at, it's the same sort of thing. But the other problem we have, as you know, especially where you are, is this trade problem. The trade deficit, the loss of factories, we lost 50,000 factories during the years of the Bush administration, fighting back against what China's doing in other countries, and we're going back to the same old policies, and guess what? The trade deficit is increasing. So with that stimulus, you know, things got a little better. People started spending a little more money, but the problem was you go to a store and you want to spend some money, you're not going to be able to spend it on stuff made here.
Right.
Because, you know, you're going to be – so the money goes out to China as a trade deficit, which isn't helping the jobs here and isn't helping economic growth. And we haven't done anything – to change the policies that have led to that. So that's still dragging us down, too. So, but we've gotten into this national frenzy. They aren't even talking about jobs. I mean, you just hear them talking about how are we going to cut the deficit. And the two sides of the argument are one side says we got to cut out everything, including get rid of Medicare. And the other side of the argument is, well, let's not cut out that much. And neither side of the argument says, hey, we got to cut that bloated military budget.
Well, how did we let this happen? Because the Republicans ran on a platform of we're going to create jobs, and then as soon as they won, it stopped. The whole job talk stopped, and then
That's right.
Focused on how do we destroy things.
Because that wasn't what they meant to do. That was only what they said. Because they said what they had to say. And if you remember, I was in Pennsylvania. I remember seeing these ads that said Democrats, or no, they didn't say Democrats. They said my opponent voted to cut $500 billion from Medicare. They didn't say my opponent's a Democrat and I'm a Republican. They just said my opponent cut Medicare because they knew people cared about Medicare. But now they're in office, and there isn't another election for a while yet. The first thing they do is they're getting rid of Medicare. So, well, we won't let it happen, but that's what they voted on last week. So we have this royal wedding of trade deficits and austerity, and austerity is another word for cutbacks,
right,
where they've just got convinced that they've got to do more and more cutbacks as if that's going to help anything. But, you know, what it's really about is Medicare is the best example. You do this phase out of Medicare they're talking about doing, and they're going to give old people vouchers that won't cover all of Medicare, and it's like somebody 80 who's sick is supposed to figure out which insurance company to use, as if an insurance company is going to give insurance to somebody who's 80 and sick. But
never going to happen.
But what happens is it's no longer on the government's books. So government spending goes down. The Center for Economic Policy Research says, yes, government spending goes down, but it drives the costs up. You and me will be paying much, much more per each person than it would have been if we'd have just gotten Medicare. They said $7 for every dollar it saves the government. It's going to cost us $7. So we'll be paying seven times as much as it would have cost, but it won't be called government spending. And if it's not government spending, then they don't need to tax. So the rich people's tax bill goes down, and we'll have to spend seven times as much on our health care when we get older.
No, that's good profit. That's a good profit motive.
Right.
That's a good profit-making adventure.
Right, and that's a lot of money, and that's a lot of money going to private insurance companies. And so here's what's going on. When you ask how did this get turned around, I'll just give you one example. They're running – there's one of the groups that ran those Medicare ads before the election has now got millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they're running radio ads congratulating the Republicans because they are – doing what they promised, and they're protecting and preserving your Medicare like they promised. Nice, soothing voice,
yep,
all over the airwaves in some districts. And so the answer is, I mean, if you everywhere you go, you see ads, this Peterson Foundation, you know, documentaries, oh, we got to fight the deficit, oh, we got to fight the deficit, you know, and it's just this huge campaign. And the reason is because these things bring millions, billions, and billions and billions of dollars to certain people. So those people can put, you know, not nearly as much as they're going to make into these campaigns to convince people to go along with things.
Yep. you know, at some point. The story again, and I love the title of it. It's a nice job there. It's Royal Wedding of Austerity and Trade Deficits. It's Killing Our Economy, over at the Campaign for America's Future website, ourfuture.org. Dave Johnson, I appreciate the time and great work. Keep it up.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
This is beyond fabulous. It is exquisite. Donnie Trump, the flaming ego with feral hair, is drumming up a presidential run for himself. Just when you thought the GOP primary could not get any cheesier, what with Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, and others issuing sanity-curdling nonsense in a right-wing pander fest, along comes the Donald. The TV impresario and real estate huckster says that he's the man for 2012 because he has the background to run our government like a business. Whoa, Donnie, it's not nice to threaten voters. It is true that he has run several businesses right into the ground. Trump started in business right out of college with nothing but a dream, a driving ambition, and his daddy's multimillion-dollar real estate empire. He quickly turned daddy's fortune into a small one. Then he turned that into the first of his bankruptcies. But with a real talent for hype, he was able to get enough capital from Wall Street speculators, subsidies from government, and secret settlements from financial regulators to paper over his business incompetencies and improprieties. Just 2 years ago, Trump's casino operation went bankrupt, and he was tossed off its board of directors. Still, though, he has The Apprentice, his unreal reality TV show. So while Trump is not a successful businessman by a long shot, he does play one on television. And now, he wants you to help him take his cheesy act to the White House. How cheesy is he? The Donald has joined the Newt and Michelle B. in a panderfest conspiracy competition to see which one can be the most clownish in labeling Obama as a Muslim who was born in Kenya. This is Jim Hightower saying, Trump recently declared, "I'm their worst nightmare." He was referring to the Obama campaign, but he's really America's worst nightmare.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our quote of the day comes from British economist John Maynard Keynes. He says, capitalism is the extraordinary belief that the nastiest of men, for the nastiest of reasons, will somehow work for the benefit of all. And you kind of look at all the stuff that's going on with the right and this whole resurgence of the Rand woman. Kind of right on. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. I've got James on line one. How are we doing tonight, James?
Pretty good. I just I overheard your opening, your comment, your little rant about the royal wedding, and it is a case of bread and circuses, but I also remember some of my Facebook friends complaining that this was pushing coverage of the National Football League draft off the front page a little bit. I mean, just to, you know, for the British, if their bread and circuses would be the wedding, and possibly for a lot of Americans, you know, you mentioned Dancing with the Stars, and, oh, I mean, I'm guilty as charged. I do think that sports is, much like it was in Roman times, part of our bread and circuses.
Absolutely. I can't argue with you. It's just not my, to use a British term, not my cup of tea.
My cup of tea.
And, you know, I didn't watch the football draft either, so that helps you.
I didn't either, but it's distract. It is, you know, there is a distractionary, if that is such a word, angle to a lot of this, and And also people don't realize that part of the reason Obama wasn't at the wedding was also probably because he was in Alabama.
Well, I think the biggest part of it, and to be, this decision was made months and months ago. It's a security issue. I mean, to be honest, do you really want that kind of headache of having a president come in and having, you know, that kind of security? No, you don't want to ruin your wedding with something like that. And I don't see it as that all that big of a deal. Now the right, they just want to jump on it because, you know, it looks like a snub. And I don't think it was. I think it's, you know, I don't think it was a snub at all.
And as I said, even in light of that, I mean, even if he had been invited, he probably would have said, anyhow, we've got a bigger matter to attend to.
Absolutely. But if he would have gone, then they would have beat up on him for going when we have the, you know, the thing in Alabama. And to his credit, he didn't do it. He didn't go play guitar down on a tarmac somewhere and eat cake, you know, when Bush had his moment. So simple stuff. James, I appreciate the call, brother.
All righty then. Bye-bye.
All right. You ever heard of this guy, Republican from Texas? His name is Blake Farenthold. Farenthold. Evidently, he had this listening session. They're no longer, I love this, they're no longer town halls. They're listening sessions. He had this listening session at the Burns Elementary School in Texas. On Tuesday, he's going to discuss some issues with about two dozen of his constituents. And one guy said, hey, you know, what about drug testing them there welfare people? Let's drug test them. And I love the guy's answer. It's kind of neurotic. It's kind of all over the map. But it shows this guy and really the Republican Party's view of people below them, or that they view below them. He says, quote, drug testing for recipients of various welfare programs. I wonder if he would, various welfare programs. I wonder if the CEO of BP, if we could drug test him. Or the CEOs of a lot of these big multinational corporations, Jeffrey Immelt. I wonder if Immelt would allow us to drug test him. Because he is getting one of the various welfare programs out there. He goes on to say, I really think that's something that needs to be considered. We gotta, you know, nobody wants to starve anybody. everybody wants to help folks out. But we got a system where you can stay on unemployment for an awful long time. And I think we need to create a system of decreasing benefits over time to encourage you to go out and get a job. He says, I think anybody who's had an alcoholic in their life or somebody with a drug problem, they realize that until things get bad enough, there's no incentive to change. I think we're generous in some of these social programs that people are unwilling to go out and get a job. Get a job in the heat. They'd rather, instead of getting a $15 an hour job to go do roofing, they'd rather get 9 or 10 in benefits. I think drug testing is not unreasonable. And what I love there is not only is he, you know, conflating people who are unemployed with people who are alcoholics and drug addicts, he's also taking welfare recipients who must, according to him, be welfare recipients and drug addicts as well. And I think about the woman yesterday, that Sally Kern, who said, you know, that, well, the reason all the black people are paid less because they're lazy. Now look, one of these statements, you go, well, you know, that's just dumb. It's one nitwit. But there are hundreds of these cases all the time, constantly out there. And what I find really amazing is this thought that somehow we have this generous social safety net. It's just too generous. When the reality is, we rank second from the last in developed nations in this world. Second from last, only ahead of Turkey. I don't think that's very generous. In fact, Goldman Sachs, they actually did a study on this very thing. Find how many of those lazy people out there, because remember, Tom Corbett said, well, there are jobs out there, those lazy people just don't want them. Goldman Sachs. Not some hippie, liberal, left-wing, tree-hugging group, not some worker, not some union group. Goldman Sachs themselves studied the issue earlier this year and found that only one half of 1% of the 9.4% who are jobless right now can be explained because there's a job out there they won't take. But this is the frame that they use, and it's out there, and it's being regurgitated ad nauseum. Unemployed people are lazy. They're stupid. They're drunkards. They're drug addicts. On and on. We hear it all the time. And yet, the fact that there's five people out there right now looking for every one job never seems to enter into the conversation. The fact is, there aren't jobs out there. We've lost, since the Bush recession, almost 9 million jobs. And we've added more people. So we had this massive hole, this 9 million job deficit. And we keep growing people. The workforce keeps growing. The jobs haven't kept up. And yet all we hear from the Republicans is we need to cut back on spending. We need to cut back on social programs. We need to cut back on all this stuff so that the economy contracts even more and it gets worse. And that's what my fear is. Look, I understand having a problem where you're not taking in enough money to pay your bills. I understand that is a long-term problem. But if we cut back, if we slam on the brakes right now, we are headed for major, major problems.
That's a little bit like the myth of the welfare Cadillac or the women who have babies every year. I like that one. They have children every year so that they can get all that money from the welfare system. When if you look at the real numbers, that's absolutely the first thing from the truth. It's just their way of justifying their prejudice towards those in need. I mean, it's as simple as that. And I hate to say this, Rick, but I think some of it's based in racism.
And just plain stupidity and another part of it. So here's the thing, and this is why I'm bringing this all up, the whole unemployment thing. From what I'm hearing, there's going to be a House committee vote on this House Bill 916 this Wednesday, the 4th of May. Now, this bill, House Bill 916, this is really a seriously destructive unemployment compensation bill. It's been introduced by another one of these anti-worker Republicans, one of these no rights at work guy, this Scott Perry, he's from Dillsburg. But you know, the thing is this anti-worker attack bill is going to have some seriously negative implications, as we move forward if it's passed. The idea, let me just read his sponsorship memo, because I think there's a lot in here that's quite interesting. He says, in the near future, I plan to introduce legislation which will propose comprehensive reform to Pennsylvania's unemployment compensation law. This legislation, listen to this, this is the important part, one of the many. This legislation was written with direct input from the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry and the NFIB. As many of you are aware, the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund is essentially insolvent. According to the Department of Labor and Industry estimates, 2010 tax revenue raised through unemployment taxes will be $2.5 billion in 2010, with an estimated benefit payout of $4.3 billion. The department must borrow money from the U.S. Department of Labor to meet its obligations, with projections outstanding net loan balance of $3.6 billion at the end of 2010. This revenue shortfall is taking place even with all solvency trigger mechanism measures in effect, tax surcharges, employee taxes. So instead of, here's the thing. Instead of saying we need to raise revenue, like get the employers to pay what they should have been paying all along, they should have been indexed. Because if you know anything about the comp system, the unemployment compensation system, employers haven't had a bump in what they pay in about 25 years. So they're paying about the same rate as they did 25 years ago. What I find interesting is that this was written in part by business interests. Where's the labor people? Where's the other side of this? What this is going to do is that what they want to do is they want to tighten financial eligibility requirements. So they want to tighten it down to make it harder to attain. Instead of saying, you know what, guy lost his job, he needs a little helping hand to tighten him over to the next one. No, they want to try and squeeze out the number of people who are eligible. They want to require these active job search requirements. So you're going to have to come back with your certificate signed by somebody. But here's the problem. What if there are no jobs out there? What if there's nothing out there for you to get a signature on? If nobody returns your call, if nobody returns a resume, a recall on a resume, if nobody does any of the things, because I don't know about you if you've noticed, but most job applications, You have to file online. And you rarely ever get a response back. You know, I've got a friend who, he says he's sent out thousands of resumes. He's filled out thousands of online applications and hasn't heard anything back. So if I'm reading this legislation that Perry wants to put forth, all of these online things that he does, all the resumes that he sends out, all the attempts to find jobs, they're not going to be good enough. They want to tighten the eligibility for reapplication. So if you've been unemployed for a little bit and they want to make it harder for you to stay on it so they can kick you off. They want to stop giving increases so that the benefit gets lower and lower and lower so that it's harder for you to survive. And they also want to readjust the calculations for the benefits so that you get less money. So the whole idea is they're robbing Peter to pay Paul. And the sad thing is the working people are the Peter. And again, who wins in this? Well, they're the big employers. What we should have been doing all along, and this is what should have happened 25 years ago when they built this system up, should have been indexed to inflation so that every year it increases incrementally, very, very small amounts every year to make sure you build up. Have a little bit of savings. But evidently we have this aversion. You remember when the Rainy Day Fund was a big deal? When they were saying, oh, well, we've got all this money sitting in a pot somewhere, the Rainy Day Fund, we should dole it out so people spend it. And then the big crisis hit, and they couldn't wait to spend it again. And we were lucky to have it. We've got a really bizarre way of thinking about things. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this. Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
My name's Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We were a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her. Yeah, I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we got to do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
That's true. I am crazy for crazy. Because she is nuts. But Michelle Bachman was writing over at the conservative blog. I think it's redstate.com. And she wrote, I support that budget blueprint, talking about Paul Ryan's, though I've expressed caution about how we approach the issue of Medicare. We must keep our promises to those who receive Medicare benefits and those who are nearing the age of Medicare eligibility. Our challenge is to reduce the soaring amounts that government spends on health care without burdening those who are most vulnerable. Is this kind of a backpedal, do you think? Do you think it's kind of walking away from the whole, the whole we need to destroy Medicare now thing?
Actually, I don't think so. I think she's just becoming, since she's, I think she's running for president, she's becoming aware that the seniors are not taking this suggestion lightly.
Well, I think what she's doing is she's reading the polls. And a recent Gallup poll shows that the T-Twizzlers are not polling really well right now. In fact, the poll released Friday shows the poll released today shows a rise in negative opinions toward the T-Twizzlers, especially among independents. The poll also shows that the only folks that really, really view them positively are their idiot doofus base, the core radical Republican extreme conservative wing of the party there. Like I said, the idiot doofus base. Because if you remember back in March of 2010, the T-Twizzlers saw a 37% favorability, so 30% of the country thought, hey, not bad, we like them, they're good guys. 40% said, what a bunch of idiots. Today, that number's kind of changed a little bit. Their favorables have dropped to 33%, while the unfavorables up to 47%. So some of those people in the middle have shifted a little bit to the unfavorable side, and some folks have fallen off the favorable side. Not surprisingly. The base there, the base of the T-Twizzler movement are angry old men, 50 and older. That's the base. Surprisingly, and I guess I'm kind of surprised at it, that the other end of this are the people who are most opposed are women 50 and older. So you've got an interesting, I would love to see that argument at the kitchen table where the angry old curmudgeon-y guy is all tea partied up with his flag and his hat and his bumper sticker across his behind, railing at the woman who's telling him, you're an idiot, stop it. That would make a great sitcom.
If you've looked at some of these town hall meetings, Rick, the best protesters have been women. And they are really giving you-know-what to these congressmen.
Well, the reality is I think women have woke up to the realization that they're going to take away Medicare. And now, look, my and I've said this before, my grandmother is in the hospital. She's got some heart problems. She's got some hip problems. She's got some, a whole bunch of problems. I don't want to get into it, but she's got a whole bunch of problems, and it's not looking good. But my aunt is the sole caregiver. My uncle doesn't really do anything, and, that's really the only family we've got left, and I'm here a couple hundred miles away. So it's all fallen onto my aunt, which is kind of what happens in this country. It generally falls onto the women to take care of the parents, to take care of those who need it. That's how it's been. Now, it could be changing. I'm not saying that, don't get me into this whole pigeonhole thing of being, oh, you're just gender biased. It is what it is. And I think women realize that if you take away that Medicare, this is going to be a real problem. Because, my aunt even said, she goes, without Medicare, and my aunt is the most apolitical person you'll ever meet. She said, without Medicare, your grandmother's dead years ago. Because at 75, they would have never given her the heart surgery that she had. She lived an extra 7 or 8 years. But it never happened. So I think that women are looking at this going, hey, don't take that Medicare away.
Well, I think you have, to some degree, Rick, you have the situation where some of them women who were from the old school where they stayed home and raised the kids, and perhaps they don't have the retirement that some of the men do. I think that's a little bit of it. But let's be honest, women, when you're talking about Social Security, you're talking about programs which help the children, they have always been a little more sensitive, probably because they have to, a little bit more than men, deal with the real life issues.
But at the end of this, the reality is I do believe that folks are a little bit freaked out by this. when the Republicans said that they wanted to change this. We don't like change, and especially not this change. This whole idea of, oh, here's a voucher, go out into the private sector and find what you need.
Well, I think on top of that, if you've caught this, and I did, and I was glad to see it, it's not only the fact that they really want to change Medicare into a vouchered system. They're trying to hide behind the fact, well, you guys, you know, no, we're not trying to take it away from you. It's only those people below 55. Well, in some ways, that's like sticking your finger in their eye, like saying, well, you know, we're gonna screw these younger people. Well, that, and like a couple of them said, well, that isn't fair. That isn't fair to my relatives either. So either way, you guys are dead wrong. It's the fact that they want to privatize it. That's the problem. It's not that we're going to wait 10 years. It's the fact that you want to do it at all.
Yep. And that's what I think has caught the ire. And I do believe when they come back on Tuesday, I do think that they probably can't wait to get away from their districts, because some of the verbal beatings they've taken have just been amazing. Well, it's been amazing to watch. You know, and it hasn't really – have you seen it on the mainstream media? Because I've been consuming a little bit more media lately. I haven't seen the level of just all-out bombardment of messaging over these town halls like we saw with Lebanon, here with that guy screaming at Spector. We haven't seen that kind of news coverage. And I'm telling you, there's at least one or two of these in every district where the congressmen, the representatives are just getting balled out and taken to the carpet. It's gotten so bad in some areas that they won't even take questions anymore. Yeah. You have to write them out and they'll answer your written questions. I think at some point what it's going to be is they're just going to lower them down, like the Pope has the Pope mobile. They'll drive them in they're in like a little congressman mobile, and you'll just talk to them in their little bubble.
Some of them are cowards. I know the one congressman, he just kept getting hammered and hammered, and he got to the point where he said, meeting over. He couldn't take it anymore. That was beautiful.
I wonder what his reelection chances are.
Well, seriously, I think this really is going to help the Democrats when you come to some key issues. Look at lifting the debt ceiling. I think maybe some of these Republicans who already know they're in trouble are maybe going to think twice with voting with the Tea Party and not lifting that.
And now you go back and you stop me thinking of somebody like Joe Sestak, who I think was a fantastic congressman, an absolute workaholic.
Tragedy that he lost.
An absolute workaholic. Had his offices open 7 days. And I remember one time, I seem to remember that there was a town hall he had that he would have stayed there all night, that they couldn't get him out of there. I'd hate to be his handler, because he's one of those guys that once he got in there, he's never going to leave.
Oh, he was, I never thought, I shouldn't say never. It was hard to outwork Arlen Specter. Arlen Specter was an old war horse, but he did. He actually outworked Arlen Specter, and I think that's one of the reasons he beat him. He was all over this state, just relentless.
Yep, I got an email during the break. And again, if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, I do answer all emails personally. James Wright, I just heard your remark about the proposed changes to unemployment compensation, and I can't help but wonder if a goal of this may be to funnel people into the economy or temp agencies. He said, I have nothing against temp agencies. My last job and the one I have now are through the such agencies, but the wages are less than the regular employees at the sites, health insurance in many cases limited. Etc. Look, you know, that is the part of it. That's the main part of it. It's to get more people into the labor pool. It's to flood the labor pool so the wages go down. That's the point. And anybody who tells you otherwise, they're lying to you. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this with our good friend Ian Millhiser from the Center for American Progress, Think Progress blog. We're right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to Win
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Milwaukee, Wisconsin will be the epicenter of May Day rallies expected to draw hundreds of thousands of people nationwide this weekend. Workers from all walks of life in America will join in solidarity from California to Wisconsin and beyond, rallying and marching with progressive allies commemorating the legacy of May Day. It will be a protest against the assaults on worker rights and a call to fix America's broken immigration system. Students and churches are joining workers and political progressives in the rallies. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka will join the Milwaukee rally Sunday, ground zero for the defense of worker rights. Trumka says this year all working people are standing strong together to show the world that the fights for worker rights and immigrant rights are cut of the same cloth. Trumka says working people will speak with one voice on May Day to fight for better wages and bits, job security, and safer workplaces for everybody. Pennsylvania's governor is highly unpopular in the wake of his budget-cutting moves. Jesse Russell reports.
Newly elected Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett received low marks in a recently released Quinnipiac University poll. Corbett only has a job approval rating of 39% in the Keystone State. The drag on his poll numbers seems to come from the way he's addressing the budget. 50% of those polled says his proposals are unfair. The poll was released on the same day it was announced that due to budget cuts, the city of Philadelphia will need to slash 3,820 school employees, including 12% of educators. Corbett wants to slash $1.1 billion in education spending, with $292 million of that spending coming from Philly. Overall, the Philadelphia School District will have a $620 million budget gap. In addition to the cuts being made to staff, Philadelphia will see an end to full-day kindergarten, drastic cuts to many vocational, music, and athletic programs, and a 20% reduction in services for English language learners. Transportation is expected to be cut nearly in half, with a 44% decrease in that budget. The school district says it will only provide busing for students they are required to bus by law.
Thousands of motorcyclists are expected to bring their bikes to Wisconsin's Capitol in a thunderous show of solidarity for workers' rights. Thunder around the rotunda will happen rain or shine between 2 and 5 p.m. Central Time in Madison this Saturday, April 30th. The rally is endorsed by Madison Teachers, Inc., the AFL-CIO, United Steelworkers, AFSCME, and SEIU, Iron Workers Local 8, and SEIU. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and by the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. One of these funny stories, African-American pastor, his name is Bishop E.W. Jackson. He's running for the U.S. Senate there in Virginia in the open seat left by Jim Webb, who's stepping aside in 2012. He's arguing, and I love this, he says, quote, the three-fifths clause was an anti-slavery amendment and that its purpose was to limit the voting power of slave-holding states. I can only say, wow. Maybe the good bishop didn't realize that slaves had no rights. So, if anything, I would think the clause was put in to boost the population of the South and garner them greater congressional numbers. Maybe. Just a thought. Just a thought. Anyway, I've got our good friend on the line, Ian Millhiser from the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is the website. Ian, thanks for taking time for me.
It's good to be back. Thanks, Rick.
What do you think of our good bishop, the Bishop Jackson, running for the open seat there in Virginia, that the three-fifths clause was actually an anti-slavery amendment?
Yeah, no, that's just not how, I mean, the whole point of the three-fifths clause was it took slaves who didn't get to vote and counted, or at least part of them, towards the number of representatives that the South got in the electoral colleges and Congress. So it was basically free votes for slave owners is what this amounted to. And it led to a lot of very significant results. You know, possibly the most significant election in U.S. history was the Jefferson-Adams election. Jefferson was favored by the slaveholders, and Adams actually would have won if it wasn't for the fact that the South had such an advantage in the Electoral College because of the Three-Fifths Clause.
Yeah, I mean, just this rewriting of history constantly and this misinterpretation of the Constitution that the folks on the right seem to just love so much.
Yeah, no, I mean, you see it over and over again, especially when it comes to the Constitution. I mean, they don't think that the text actually means something. They think it means what they want it to mean.
Yeah, you can just reach behind you, get a good grip back there and pull something out, and there's the fact. The reason I had you on, though, is that there's a decision this week at the Supreme Court that has me just flipping over backwards. It's this AT&T decision.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through this a little bit. What was the point of it? Walk me through it.
So the issue here is that AT&T allegedly cheated a whole lot of people out of $30 each. And, you know, the thing about being cheated out of 30 bucks is you're not going to like it, but you're also not going to sue over $30 right. because it's going to cost you more to bring the lawsuit than you're going to get back if you win your 30 bucks back. And so what the Supreme Court said is they said that people are no longer, or people can be forced to sign away their right to bring what's called a class action. And a class action is just when a corporation injures 1,000 people in the same way, all 1,000 of them can join together into one lawsuit.
Right, like this.
Oh, go ahead.
Like this, cheating thousands of people out of 30 bucks each.
Exactly. And this class action mechanism, it's the only way that you can hold corporations accountable when they do something like this, where they cheat a whole lot of people out of a little bit of money. Because if you can join them together into a class, a lawyer's going to pick up the case, there's a lot of money at stake, and the most important thing is that the corporation will be held accountable so that they don't do this again. If you don't have class actions, it gives all of these companies, your cell phone company, your credit card company, potentially your employer, the ability to cheat you out of a little bit of money every now and then, and to do it to a whole lot of people all the time and, you know, run up their profits that way without you being able to hold them accountable for their actions.
And there being no deterrent for them to do it in the future.
That's right. And that's the most important point, is that the class action allows you and allows all the other people who've been hurt by the corporation to spank the corporation a little bit so that they hurt and they don't do it again.
So is this decision, does this pretty much put an end to class action lawsuits then?
It will put an end to almost all class actions. What it says, you know, it comes from the same line of cases that led to what's called forced arbitration, when the company says, we won't deal with you unless you sign away your right to go to a real court and instead go to an arbitrator who's generally picked by the corporation that you're trying to sue. So they said that not only can the corporation force you to sign up for forced arbitration, the corporation can also say that you have to agree that if you ever have a problem with them, you can't bring a class action, and the corporation can force you to sign that away before you'll do business with them. So your cell phone company say, we won't give you a cell phone unless you give up your right to a class action. Your boss can say, we won't hire you unless you give up your right to bring a class action. So, you know, almost all instances where there's going to be a class action, generally you have a contractual relationship between you and the person you're suing, and they can just stick a little clause in that contract, and there go your class action rights.
And is this more of a thing of people didn't know that it was in there, that they didn't read it? Because I can't imagine that people would knowingly enter into one of these contracts where they have no rights.
Well, in many cases, it's because people don't know, because, you know, when was the last time you read the 90,000-page agreement when you bought a book on Amazon or, you know, or something like that? But even if you do know, you know, these clauses are ubiquitous. They're in, you know, they're in virtually every contract in some industry. So if every single cell phone company has this clause in there, choice is to sign away your rights or not have a phone. If every single bank puts that clause in there, your choice is to sign away your rights or not have a credit card. And so, you know, and so that's the problem. It's the fact that the industry standard has been, oh, let's just stick the clause in there. And now that the Supreme Court is giving such a huge thumbs up to this, you're just going to see more of these clauses. And it's going to reach the point where there's going to be entire industries where it doesn't matter if you go with AT&T or you go with their competitor. If you want a cell phone, you're not going to be able to get one without signing away your rights.
That's just amazing stuff. And for me, what really scares me, because I got to be honest, I could probably live without a cell phone. I hate this thing anyway. It's always ringing and always on my ear. But, you know, having a job, most of us can't survive without a job. And I look at most things and how's it going to affect the workforce? How's it going to affect working people? And I look at this and it takes me back to the days of liberty of contract where the boss says, you know, this for that. If you don't let me do this, if you ever join a union, if you don't, you sign this contract, you're fired. You know, a lot of bad stuff in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I mean, what was amazing about that era, you know, what's sometimes called the Lochner era in the early part of the 20th century, is the Supreme Court said, like, you know, the only job that you can get is one that doesn't pay you enough to live. And the fact that you've signed a contract saying you'll do that job, the Supreme Court said, oh, we're protecting you, the workers' rights, because we're letting you sign a contract where you get no money at all. And that's why there can't be things like a minimum wage or overtime. And what we came to realize in this country is that there's a difference between a contract that you sign with someone that you're on relatively even terms with. There's a difference, or a contract that two businesses that are of relatively even bargaining power have. And when you have someone who's desperate for the money they need to live and a big, massive corporation that's going to be able to demand whatever terms they want, when you have that unequal bargaining power, you need one of two things. You either need a union, because the union can make the bargaining power more equal because all the workers can join together, or you need the government to step in and say, look, there's a way you've got to treat your workers, and that means a minimum wage, that means overtime, that means safety regulations, and so on and so forth.
Right. And I'm more inclined to go with the union than I am with the government regulations, because I think we get lax when we have all of these laws on the books that people seem to think are enforced. So let me ask you this, Ian, you know, mm-hmm. in going forward with this decision and a lot of these very pro-corporate, pro-business decisions, how do we stop this? How do we go backwards on this? Or is it possible? Is this now the law of the land?
Well, I mean, it's the law of the land for now, but, you know, there are two things that we can do. One is there's a bill in Congress called the Federal Arbitration Act. You know, this was not a constitutional decision, meaning that you have to amend the Constitution. This case that came down this week just said, oh, we're going to now reinterpret the Federal Arbitration Act so that you don't have any class action rights. Congress has the power to amend the Federal Arbitration Act. There's a bill that would do that called the Arbitration Fairness Act that would get rid of forced arbitration and that would restore people's class action rights. So Congress could pass that law. And then the other thing that needs to happen is people who care about workers' rights have to understand that the Supreme Court is a huge leverage point. I mean, the unfortunate fact is that we have been out-hustled by the right, because the right is putting up these crazy justices who will do, you know, whatever corporate America wants, and the left has been disengaged from this battle. We need to get just as engaged in getting justices who care about following the law and making sure that laws that are meant to protect workers are enforced, so that we can fight back against the right's efforts to install corporate-owned justices on our court.
Well, let me ask you a last question I've got before we wrap this up. You know, one of the other issues that I'm seeing right now is this debt ceiling thing. Mm-hmm. And the idea that somehow that the Republicans holding the debt ceiling hostage is somehow unconstitutional. Curious what your thoughts are.
There are some parts of that which are unconstitutional. So the Constitution says that Congress is not allowed to default on its debts. So if there is a debt that has already been incurred by the federal government, it would be unconstitutional not to pay it. And there's some open questions there. You know, Social Security, I think there's a strong argument to say that someone who has paid into a pension system their entire life, they are owed that money, and the government is not allowed to default on it by not paying them back that money. But, you know, the problem with the constitutional rule is it's not entirely clear to me that the Constitution would allow the government to enter into new debt. So, you know, to the extent that we need to pay, you know, new money so we can pay our military, so we can build our roads, or they continue to have a functioning government. I don't know if the Constitution would necessarily save that.
Okay. But this decision with this AT&T decision, this is bad stuff, right?
This is terrible stuff. I mean, this is the most corporate, you know, biggest blow to ordinary Americans since the Citizens United decision, because it takes away, you know, it basically says to all the companies that you do business with, do whatever you want to anyone you want to do it to, just so long as you do it a few dollars at a time.
Amazing. Amazing stuff. Ian Millhiser, policy analyst and blogger for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. I appreciate your time, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
ECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing Life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life. Get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, You'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the way is.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. UPI is reporting a French report saying that the country of France's standard of living has doubled in the past 40 years, although the gap between the rich and poor has not changed for 10 years. The National Statistics Agency, INSEE, has released the latest figures from 2008 showing most households exist on the average of $3,500 a month, about $150 more than 10 years ago. However, what they say is it's indicating a large disparity between the richest and the poorest household. The lowest 10% have a monthly budget of less than $1,600, while the top has at least $7,300 a month. The biggest gap in rich and poor is found in Paris, the capital, and in surrounding suburbs, according to the report. Despite the increase in overall standard of living, some 8 million people still live below the poverty line there, which is defined by a monthly budget of $1,400 or less. Now, here's the important thing. France ranks third in terms of annual revenue worldwide with an average $42,482, behind the U.S.'s $57,800 and Germany's $43,000, but ahead of Britain. But, you know, their standard of living is up. But they've got national health care. That's one of the things that a little bit bummed out here today, Jake. Not having a good day. Not having a good day. Anyway, with the... just not having a good day. Yeah, you get one of those, you ever have one of those phone calls that just comes right in the middle of something that stops you completely in your tracks and makes you, reevaluate your priorities. Mm-hmm. That was what the call I got during the break. My grandmother not doing very well. That whole, if you've ever been part of this where the doctors come in and there's a whole bunch of decisions that you have to make. When you know where the end is coming, you just don't know when. But it's all of this paperwork. It's all of this decision process that goes along with that's where we are right now. So it's a sad day for me, a sad time right now. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Evidently, the economy is turning around. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. The only problem with is they're saying that the divorce rate is going up. It had fallen sharply between 2008 and 2009. Now, you know, it's creeping its way back up. Linda Vey-Velkin, she's the president of American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. They're divorce lawyers. That's beautiful language. She said people were afraid that they were going to lose their job, so they were very cautious about getting a divorce because you have to split your assets. She said that the divorce rate dropped 24% in 2008 and 57% in 2009, but it started inching up last year, and she says things are starting to improve. and I'm going, starting to improve? Wait a second. And I guess for her, it is starting to improve. Business is picking up. You know, those nasty divorces are back.
The irony is, Rick, the number one cause of divorce is usually differences in money. And now the irony is the number of divorces has decreased because of money, because of the economic conditions, and they're afraid that, you know, obviously, when you split up and you have a divorce, you split the proceeds.
According to figures provided by the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, the United States has the world's highest divorce rate. You know, the good, God, fair, and Christian people. We're a Christian nation, see? We're a Christian nation. Mm-hmm. We also have the highest divorce rate in the world.
with 4.95 divorces for every 1,000 inhabitants. The marriage rate is about 9.8 for every 1,000 inhabitants. So over half of the people who get married get divorced. The latest figures from the Center of Disease Control show a sharp drop in the divorce rate between 2007 and 2009. Here in Pennsylvania, the divorce rate from 2007 to 2009, according to the census, according to the Center for Disease Control, dropped from 32,293 to just around 25,600. So maybe it's Rick Santorum. Maybe Santorum did it. He can take credit for dropping the divorce rate, since he seems to be taking credit for solving every other problem. Because I don't know if you saw it in one of his releases, he's taking credit for solving the world's AIDS problem. It's all because of him. You know,
isn't he wonderful?
He's the guy.
Well, he's also the kind of person, and I don't know if he did or didn't, but the right wing would probably tell you, well, you know, it's that gay couple living down the street. And that's the cause of all this divorce.
Yeah.
Well, like my never figured that one out, but
well, you know, I still
destroying
remember
destroying the family.
My buddy, you know, the guy I used to work with, he did the same thing. You know, that gay couple's going to ruin the sanctity of my marriage. With a girlfriend up in Massachusetts and a kid, and a wife and a couple of kids back in here in Pennsylvania, that had nothing to do with it. That nothing there. But that gay couple going to ruin the sanctity of his marriage. I'm not quite getting it either. But, you know, as long as he can justify that in his head, you know, God bless him. And he was. He was a thumper. He was a Bible thumper. He could quote you. He was a quotum and totem guy. He would tell you every word in there and what it meant. And he didn't seem to mind that adultery thing.
Yeah, did you ever question him about that?
No. Because, you know.
Last I checked, that was one of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not commit.
One of the heavy ten?
Yep. One of the big ten.
You see, like with guys like that who love to spew and spout, especially when it's the Constitution or the Bible, I do believe that they don't read either. Because with that guy, you could have exchanged the Ten Commandments for the Ten Amendments, and he wouldn't have read them or known them either way.
Don't let the facts get in your way.
Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be a long hour and a half. my mind is completely somewhere else right now. It's one of those moments where you go, the reality has popped into the real world, and there are things that are pressing.
You put things in perspective at those times.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. When we come back, we're gonna talk with Ray McGovern. He is a former CIA analyst and the founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. We're right back after that.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
This is beyond fabulous. It is exquisite. Donnie Trump, the flaming ego with feral hair, is drumming up a presidential run for himself. Just when you thought the GOP primary could not get any cheesier, what with Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, and others issuing sanity-curdling nonsense in a right-wing pander fest, along comes the Donald. The TV impresario and real estate huckster says that he's the man for 2012 because he has the background to run our government like a business. Whoa, Donnie, it's not nice to threaten voters. It is true that he has run several businesses right into the ground. Trump started in business right out of college with nothing but a dream, a driving ambition, and his daddy's multimillion-dollar real estate empire. He quickly turned daddy's fortune into a small one. Then he turned that into the first of his bankruptcies. But with a real talent for hype, he was able to get enough capital from Wall Street speculators, subsidies from government, and secret settlements from financial regulators to paper over his business incompetencies and improprieties. Just 2 years ago, Trump's casino operation went bankrupt, and he was tossed off its board of directors. Still, though, he has The Apprentice, his unreal reality TV show. So while Trump is not a successful businessman by a long shot, he does play one on television. And now, he wants you to help him take his cheesy act to the White House. How cheesy is he? The Donald has joined the Newt and Michelle B. in a panderfest conspiracy competition to see which one can be the most clownish in labeling Obama as a Muslim who was born in Kenya. This is Jim Hightower saying, Trump recently declared, I'm their worst nightmare. He was referring to the Obama campaign, but he's really America's worst nightmare.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Help to turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, the president is shuffling around his national security team with Bush's guy, Robert Gates, stepping aside. I guess Leon Panetta will be moving over from the CIA director spot to become the next defense secretary. And General David Petraeus, I guess he's going to be retiring soon. He'll fill the CIA director's gig. I got to be honest, I'm not all that comfortable with Petraeus in the CIA. Not quite sure why, but I'm just not comfortable with it. That's why I've asked Ray McGovern, a former senior CIA analyst and the co-founder of Veteran Intelligent Professionals for Sanity. Ray, thanks for taking time for me.
You're welcome, Rick. Glad to be with you.
You know, before we get into the politics of all this, I got to be honest. I don't know why I'm just not all that comfortable with Petraeus heading up the CIA, given the fact that that he's going to be in charge of looking over. The positions of, that he's taken over the years.
Well, that's exactly right. You do well to be disquieted about that. I mean, put yourself in the position of an analyst at CIA who has already written that Afghanistan is a fool's errand and that the so-called surge in Iraq was nothing more nor less than letting Bush and Cheney ride off into the sunset without having lost the war. You know, analysts have been very candid in many areas in the CIA. That's why I was very reluctant to suggest throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. The baby's still functioning. There's still some integrity there in the analysis ranks. Now we have the chief architect of these wars. He's going to be asked by the president, how are we doing? And what is he going to say? He said, well, we're making progress, but it's sort of fragile, and it's reversible. So, what, you know, give me a break. What does that mean, fragile and reversible? That means there's no progress at all. There's not going to be any. So, will his analysts tell him, look, General, with all due respect, you really screwed up? Or are they going to be chased out of there? Are they going to be put in the library? You know, there's a chance that maybe Petraeus will surprise us all and say, well, gosh, you know, these are the experts. They say we can't win this thing. I, Petraeus, have actually been saying this all along, that you can't win a military solution here, so maybe I ought to tell the president the truth.
Well, do you think that's possible? Do you think he can be objective and say that, you know, all this stuff that I've been pushing, all this stuff is wrong?
Everything's possible, Rick. I think this has got about a 1% probability, 1 out of 100. I just want to, you know, sort of not prejudge the guy. He has a chance now to go straight, so to speak. Whether he will or not, well, I'd have to confess that I would be shocked to see him turn around now and say, wow, I've wasted all those lives, those billions of dollars, and there are more terrorists now than ever before because of the feckless tactics that I pursued.
Right.
You know, knocking down doors in the middle of the night, killing folks with these Hellfire missiles, some of them, many of them civilians, you know, that's one heck of a way to win hearts and minds. That's counterinsurgency? Give me a break.
I mean, if that's the definition of counterinsurgency, then I think we've got a problem at the CIA then.
Yeah, he's supposed to have written the manual, right? That's not in the manual. They don't talk about Hellfire missiles. They don't talk about killing wedding parties or funeral marches. They talk about what makes sense in counterinsurgency. And even according to his own doctrine there, you need a ratio of soldiers to population that far exceeds anyone in the U.S. Army, Marine Corps, Navy combined. You put them all in Afghanistan, you still wouldn't have the ratio that Petraeus's book itself requires to subdue a, quote, insurgency, end quote.
Here's one of my other problems, and I guess it's my problem with the military structure in general that, you know, I liked Colin Powell. I thought he was a decent guy, but I didn't want him in politics because he was the good soldier. He went and sold the Iraq war knowing, I do believe that those mobile chemical labs really probably didn't exist. I'm afraid that if we have another military person in a position like this, it's going to be the good soldier doing what the politics wants.
Yeah, you've got a good point there. Colin Powell was a terrible disappointment for me. I used to see him every other morning when I was briefing his boss, Secretary of Defense Weinberger. He also grew up about five blocks from me in the Bronx, so I didn't know him then, but we had a certain affinity, and I got along just fine with him. But when he, as you say, when he aspired to power there, when he got as high as you can go in the military, that still wasn't enough. He got that way by saluting. He decided he needed to salute the president, even when President Bush told him to lie through his teeth. And I don't know how he looks at himself in the mirror. He said that, as Powell has said, you know, I really regret. What does he regret? The blot on his record. Well, how about the hundreds of thousands of folks killed in Iraq and Afghanistan? How about the 6,000 U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan? Doesn't that bother them? Well, by the time you reach that point, that very often you're sort of blinded to the real pain and suffering that your policy decisions cause. And that's really the nub of the problem.
How often have we had military leaders, and this is going to show my ignorance, but how long have we had military generals, admirals, being the head of the CIA? How often has that happened? Since it's a civilian intelligence agency.
Yeah, you ask a very good question. It's not a naive question at all. There's a tradition. It's not embedded in the law. But ever since 1947, generally speaking, there has been a military general officer or admiral, either as the director or the deputy director of the intelligence community. Now, what really counts here, Rick, is integrity. You can have integrity with 4 stars, or you can have it as a civilian. I regret to tell you, and I served under 9, count them, 9 CIA directors. The last one with any integrity was the one that served under Jimmy Carter, and he was an admiral. It was Stansfield Turner. He was head of the 6th Fleet when he was picked, and he did a damn good job. Since then, it's been awful. Take the last general, Michael Hayden. Now, how did he get the job? Well, he got the job because when he was at NSA, and Dick Cheney said, General Hayden, we want to spy on Americans. I know it's against the law, but hey, you know, these terrorists and all, will you fix things so we can monitor the conversations of American citizens without bothering to get a court warrant? Hayden saluted smartly, and that's why he became head of the CIA. The Congress knew all this, and that's the other part of the problem. The Congress has no guts at all. They knew that Hayden had violated the first commandment of the National Security Act, and that used to be, thou shalt not eavesdrop on American citizens without a court warrant. Very simple. When I was at CIA, if NSA made a mistake and left an American name in an intercept, we were immediately called and told not to blacken out that name, but to razor it out, okay? That's how important it was. They really had a tradition of sticking to the law. Now, when it was uncovered what Hayden had participated in, one of his predecessors as head of NSA, General Odom, said the guy should be court-martialed, not promoted to be head of the CIA. So what's my bottom line? My bottom line is that you can have integrity. Sometimes it's a little harder when you make 3 or 4 stars by saluting all the time. But Stansfield Turner had it, and Michael Hayden doesn't have it, and Petraeus, I'm afraid, will turn out to be in the tradition of Michael Hayden.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, as we're going down the road here, how much of this do you think is this appointment is political gamesmanship? The president trying to maybe get a potential opponent off the playing field? Since Petraeus is very popular among the American people.
Yeah, he is. You know, it's a very telling thing, Rick, and I've been reflecting about this. Have you heard anyone make fun of Petraeus?
There was just the Petraeus thing that MoveOn had done. I think it was MoveOn.
Good. Well, you know, I've counted up those rows of medals. Did you know he's given himself another row?
No, I didn't.
He's got 11 now. And remember when he fell over on the Senate, on the table there at the Senate Armed Services Committee meeting? I don't know if you remember, but he was testifying one morning, and all of a sudden, boom, do you remember which side he fell? Yeah, he fell on the side with all the medals. He's just the top heavy, you know? Maybe he had enough breakfast, but he didn't have enough breakfast to sit up straight with all those medals. Now I josh, of course. But why isn't it that somebody would say, he's the very bottom of a modern major general, or something out of Gilbert and Sullivan. The guy is just, look at those medals. So what's he going to do without the medals?
That's a good question, because he's going to have to put on a suit and look like George Tenet.
Yeah, kind of. You know, reminded of my grandmother, who was an Irish seamstress, and she used to travel around the then-known world with a rich lady. And one time the rich lady was going out with the Duke, and he came all dressed up in the kinds of paraphernalia you saw on the TV today. And after it was over, she came back and she said, Jane, I'm back for my date now. Tell me what you think of the Duke. And my grandmother looked at her and she said, well, I think the Duke needs his medals, okay? Well, I think Petraeus needs his medals. And the way he's wowed everybody on Capitol Hill, you know, he's going to be a threat to Obama. If Obama thinks this is a really clever move in getting Petraeus back into town, he's dead wrong. Petraeus now has a platform. He has access to all the levers of power. He can, as he is already doing, curry favor with the neoconservatives. This is a very dangerous situation that Obama has willy-nilly put himself in because, remember where you heard it first, I think Petraeus is interested in running for president, not so much in 2016, but in 2012.
Interesting. So let me ask you this, Ray McGovern. You know, with everything that's going on in the world, you know, I look at the Libya thing that's going on that I think eventually we're going to get sucked into. How is he going to react to this? What kind of information? Because my concern about military people is that they see every problem as a military solution. It's kind of like the carpenter who only has a hammer. Everything's a nail.
Right.
That's what concerns me, that all of this information will be coming and leading us in one direction, which is the same thing we've been doing.
Yeah. Well, that's just it, you know. When one of the White House spokesmen said, and he was quoted in the Washington Post today, you know, this is a veteran team. We just couldn't find a better team to do this job. I thought about that. I said, oh, no. You couldn't find anybody better than this crowd? My God, look what they've done for the last several years. So, I mean, it's not funny. Now, what will happen? Well, you know, Rick, probably, that every week in Afghanistan, we spend $2 billion.
Yep.
Now, part of that has to do with the cost of gasoline. You know what it costs to put 1 gallon of gas in a tank that the Marines or the Army are operating in Afghanistan? $400. That's 100 times what we're paying, right? $4. Now, the fancy people, the economists, talk about, quote, opportunity costs, end quote. Well, you know, that's a real valid point when you look at what that means, because for every $1 billion you spend in Afghanistan, teachers get fired at Pittsburgh, firemen get laid off in the middle of Pennsylvania. What's going on here? This is crazy. And people don't realize it because if they listen to Fox News and most of the other major media, it never gets said. These wars cannot be won. They're a huge drain on our economy, And the only people that are profiting from the war are the profiteers. And I use that term advisedly. Right. And guess what? They happen to be the same corporations that own the channels and the the channels and
the radio, the TV, you name it, the corporations. So
that's why you guys, you Rick, and people like you, do an invaluable service because the people need to know what's going on, and it's really hard unless they have a computer and are willing to spend 20 minutes a day to listen to you or to watch Amy Goodman or even just to listen to her on the radio. I tell you, I make no bones about it. Sometimes I can sleep in because I'm sort of retired, sort of. But I set my alarm for 13 minutes before 8 here in Washington. And why do I do that? Because it takes 11 minutes for me to make a cup of coffee, and then it takes 2 minutes for me to upload or to get the Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! On my machine here, on my computer. 1 hour of that in the morning, and I feel educated. And
yeah, she does a nice job.
Very often, yeah, very often, truth be told, later in the day if I'm doing an interview, well, I plagiarize. I shamelessly the knowledge that I've already gained, not only from the other websites, but from Amy. So now Americans don't know that. They don't know how easy it is to get informed. WikiLeaks is the big hope here. You know, if the fourth estate, the mass media, is dead, which it is, well, there's a fifth estate. And that estate exists in the ether. And it's not susceptible of government or corporation or advertisers' control. It's free, at least so far, okay?
Yep.
That's why our government is going off tooth and nail against not only Bradley Manning, but Julian Assange, trying to get them put away forever because it's too risky when too much information gets out. And even though some of the major newspapers, like the New York Times, has been in receipt of a lot of this stuff, even they sort of, when they publish it, they put a special gloss on it to suit the needs of the corporations and frankly, the Israel lobby that control these people or have inordinate influence over them. So people need to listen, need to know which programs to listen to. You know that better than I. But they also need to know which websites just to tune into. And it's a lot to ask with people with two jobs, sometimes three jobs. But they need to do that because otherwise you're going to have no firemen, you're going to have no policemen, you're going to have very, very, very few teachers. You're going to have 50 in a class, and nobody gives a darn, because the people that are really profiting here are the profiteers that own the media.
Yep.
Pretty serious.
Yeah, absolutely serious. You know, I always go back to Smedley Butler's piece, War is a Racket, when I think about war, which is what scares me about someone like Petraeus, a general being the head of the CIA, especially given the background. So last question I've got for you, maybe a prediction. Where do you think this is going to go? What do you think this is going to end up being?
Well, The bad news is that Afghanistan is going to be seen widely to have been a terrible mistake. And this is going to happen before Obama runs again.
Don't you think we already think that already?
Well, a lot of the people do, but yeah, you're right. The polls show that. But now when let's take this July, we're supposed to be pulling some troops out. Well, that's going to, these so-called areas that have been fragilely and not irrevocably subdued, right, whatever that means, they're going to go right back to the Taliban.
Of course they are.
What's going to happen? Petraeus is going to say, I told them not to do that. Here I made all these gains. Yeah, they were fragile. Yeah, they were irreversible. But I made all these gains, and now look what this klutz Obama, who never had any stars on his uniform, look what he's doing. And things are going to get pretty, pretty hot in recriminations. And if Obama thinks that he'll be able to win a battle with the divine Petraeus, he's got an uphill battle if he wants to do that because, as you say, Petraeus is much more popular than he. And so I think Obama tried to be too smart by half by getting Petraeus out of there, but I think Petraeus wanted to get out of there because he doesn't want to be around for the summer and fall when things are shown to be going south in a very quick way.
You don't want to be the one riding down the ship if you don't have to be.
Yeah, you know, that's what McChrystal did. Now, I don't get a lot of people to agree with me, but he made it impossible for himself to stay in that role. And he knew that. He's a smart guy. Why did he do that? He wanted to get fired. Why? Because his tactics had been a miserable failure. Look what he promised to do. You know, bring a government into that little village near Kandahar. You know, government in a box. Well, give me a break. It was a miserable failure. That area is still not pacified at night. And so he saw the handwriting on the wall. He said, I don't want to be responsible for that. So he gives an interview to a Rolling Stone guy, of all people, and then he professes surprise when the Rolling Stone guy just writes what he heard.
He could have borrowed the sign from Bush. Mission accomplished. Ray McGovern, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work you do. Former senior CIA analyst, co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. I appreciate your time.
You're most welcome, Rick.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Is this a good choice? I still don't think so.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
My name's Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We're a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her. Yeah, I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we got to do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it, we make it happen.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So what do you think about this Petraeus appointment? Do you think Petraeus is going to be a decent CIA director? Do you think he's capable of looking over all of the decisions he's made the last several years and coming to a different conclusion? I just don't. What do you think, Jake?
Well, judging from his performance previously, I have some severe questions. I have some serious questions about the decision that was made to put him in charge. Hopefully it'll work out, but, you know, after listening to the interview here with a man who's been involved for a long time, I'm tending to be pretty skeptical.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it and I go, do I really want to see another situation? And look, I've got nothing against military people, but generally they're very, do the good soldier thing, don't rock the ship, down that line much. And my example is Colin Powell. He had to know what he was doing was not going to be a very good thing. He had to know, and he did know. He had said it in the past. In fact, he told them, if you break it, you bought it. You go into there into Baghdad and you break it, you're stuck with it. And he knew, but here again, and he knew going the first time, the Powell Doctrine itself was to use overwhelming force. They didn't even do that. They tried to do it on the cheap, because of course it wasn't going to cost us anything.
Well, if you remember, some of the people who were doing the advising, and they actually got out because they were in disfavor, had told the administration, you're going to need about 450,500. He said, whoa, we can't do that. But that was their military advice, obviously. Politics reared its ugly head, and some of those people actually got in disfavor and got out of the military. And if you think that politics doesn't have a lot to do with the inner workings of the military, you're sadly mistaken. It shouldn't, but it does.
So it will be interesting, because I just think this is a failed political move. It worries me. It worries me on a number of levels. Is there no one else? Was there no one else in a country of 312 million people? This is the only guy? I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, there's been a big stink over the air traffic controllers. And what I've been hearing from people talking about this is, they're blaming the workers again. It's the air traffic controllers' fault. Because a couple of them, and this is a problem, they fall asleep behind their little screen. And, there have been a couple of incidents that could have been catastrophic. It's got to stop. There's got to be a policy change that makes it impossible for that to happen. A whole bunch of stuff has to happen. But blaming the controllers, saying, I've heard rumors that a couple of, leftward-leaning talk show hosts are blaming them. Well, they should come to work prepared. It's obvious they've never worked the night shift. It's obvious that they've never worked swing shifts. It's obvious because they don't know what they're talking about. Anybody who's been in a situation where you work a week first shift, you work a week second shift, you work a week third shift, and you keep rotating like that, knows that third shift, man, is a nightmare. And, I worked nights for years. And when that sun came up, I couldn't keep my eyes open. It didn't matter. That truck, because I drove a truck for years, I pulled off the side of the road, and I took a 20-minute nap until the sun was up. Because it was that going from darkness to light that was my downfall. Nothing I can do. Now, they can't pull over and take a nap. They're not allowed. Contractually, they're not allowed, under the rules set up by the FAA, to, on their breaks, go in and take a nap. They are not allowed to do that, which I always thought, and again, this is one of those things that just kind of makes me wonder, that's your time. You should be able to do whatever you want on your 15-minute break or your half-hour lunch or whatever it is you get. I don't understand why putting your head down for 15 minutes and taking a nap isn't legal. It's not, though. So basically, you've got this situation where you're setting these people up for trouble. And what's amazing to me is there's only one person in that tower. To me, I don't think there should be only one person. There should be two people there at all times.
Well, there's been strong recommendations that they change that, Rick. I don't know if it's officially been changed. But
it hasn't been changed.
But the recommendations have been that you have at least two. At least two. And remember this, some of the smaller airports, you might not have a plane coming in your area for an hour. Or for several hours, which makes it even more difficult. If you're on, and you know this to be true, certainly true in my work life, if you're busy, you might be tired, but you're not going to fault. But as soon as you relax, and as soon as you don't have a lot to do to keep you busy, all of a sudden, you're nodding, and Mother Nature takes over, and it's difficult.
Yeah. And I think this is another one of those moments where it's a good opportunity to go after and point the finger at the workers instead of saying the policy's screwed up. Just like the whole thing with the TSA, with the people at the scanning booths. It wasn't their fault. They didn't like doing it. It was the policy. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Milwaukee, Wisconsin will be the epicenter of May Day rallies expected to draw hundreds of thousands of people nationwide this weekend. Workers from all walks of life in America will join in solidarity from California to Wisconsin and beyond, rallying and marching with progressive allies commemorating the legacy of May Day. It will be a protest against the assaults on worker rights and a call to fix America's broken immigration system. Students and churches are joining workers and political progressives in the rallies. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka will join the Milwaukee rally Sunday, ground zero for the defense of worker rights. Trumka says this year all working people are standing strong together to show the world that the fights for worker rights and immigrant rights are cut of the same cloth. Trumka says working people will speak with one voice on May Day to fight for better wages and benefits, job security, and safer workplaces for everybody. Pennsylvania's governor is highly unpopular in the wake of his budget-cutting moves. Jesse Russell reports.
Newly elected Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett received low marks in a recently released Quinnipiac University poll. Corbett only has a job approval rating of 39% in the Stone State. The drag on his poll numbers seems to come from the way he's addressing the budget. 50% of those polled says his proposals are unfair. The poll was released on the same day it was announced that due to budget cuts, the city of Philadelphia will need to slash 3,820 school employees, including 12% of educators. Corbett wants to slash $1.1 billion in education spending, with $292 million of that spending coming from Philly. Overall, the Philadelphia School District will have a $620 million budget gap. In addition to the cuts being made to staff, Philadelphia will see an end to full-day kindergarten, drastic cuts to many vocational, music, and athletic programs, and a 20% reduction in services for English language learners. Transportation is expected to be cut nearly in half, with a 44% decrease in that budget. The school district says it will only provide busing for students there are required to bus by law.
Thousands of motorcyclists are expected to bring their bikes to Wisconsin's capital in a thunderous show of solidarity for workers' rights. Thunda around the Rotunda will happen rain or shine between 2 and 5 p.m. Central Time in Madison this Saturday, April 30th. The rally is endorsed by Madison Teachers, Inc., the AFL-CIO, United Steelworkers, AFSCME, and SEIU, Iron Workers Local 8, and SEIU. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and by the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of school, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
And evidently so is Donald Trump. Who knew? Who knew? Although most of his money, his campaign money, went to Democrats. But the Donald was trying to convince everybody that, yeah, I'm a Republican. Yeah. And he did the whole birther thing. Yeah, that doesn't make him a Republican. It just makes him stupid. And that's pretty much what he said U.S. political leaders were. A bunch of all stupid. Not to mention he used the F-bomb a couple of times, several, in fact, in a speech he gave in Las Vegas at the Treasure Island Hotel and Casino. This big speech, he railed on China, he railed on OPEC, Saudi Arabia, and he, of course, patted himself on the back with all of his accomplishments. You know, the two bankruptcies, you know, big, big accomplishments. He said, quote, when people are screwing you, you don't give them steak dinners. He was talking about China. He said, we have weak, pathetic leadership. We have incompetent leadership. And you know what? I agree with him on that. I mean, there's a lot of things that the Donald is saying is very populist rhetoric that he's throwing out, and I like it. I do. He's, you know, he's got some points. The problem is, he's a narcissist. He's going to say whatever is going to grab someone's attention. I'm glad he's saying, especially about China, especially about OPEC, I'm glad he's saying it. I'm glad he's saying that we have weak, pathetic leadership. I agree. Visionless leadership, straight up and down the tickets. Not just Republicans either. There are some Democrats who are weak-kneed. But he goes on to say, our leaders are stupid. They're stupid people. It's very, very sad. I don't know that they're stupid. I just think that they're stuck in a situation where they're beholden to the corporate dollars. Now the Donald, who claims, you know, he's this big billionaire, he's not beholden to the big dollars. He can write his own check. So he's able to say crazy things. He's able to say, you know, the birther things, but he's also able to throw out that stuff that you and I need to hear and want to hear, that China's screwing us.
And did you hear what he said about the Saudis? He said if he was president, he would tell them, you will not raise your cost of living. You will not.
Uh-huh.
We will not allow you. Well, you know, it's nice rhetoric, and you're right, it's populist rhetoric. And he got a lot of cheers, a lot of standing ovations. It's just not reality.
Well, Bush said the same thing. He said he'd pick up the phone, he'd call the Saudis and say, turn on the spigots! Turn on the spigots!
Now, see, if it's the same Saudi prince that he kissed, you know, maybe George thought he had a little leverage there, you know?
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe a little leverage. But the Donald, you know, he's saying some stuff that even I agree with. I'll give him credit, though, man. He knows how to promote himself. You know, he knows how to do that whole, hey, look at me thing. You know, maybe I should take some lessons from the Donald.
I believe the Donald said something about a 25% tax on Chinese goods. I don't know how that that would go over.
It's called a tariff.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that. But been in favor of that for years. And what's interesting is you see a lot of the Republicans who only know that Donald Trump's name is popular with Republicans, and they go, yeah, I like the Donald. I like Donald Trump. Oh, I like the one video that someone sent me. You know, of all these people who probably couldn't spell Trump going, yeah, Trump, that's who I'm gonna vote for. Well, what did he say? I don't know, but he's in the news and he does that TV show and he's got that funny rat looking thing on his head. Yeah, that's the guy. That's who we're going to vote for. And next week, though, you know, somebody else will be in the news. Oh, we're going to vote for somebody else because his name's in the news. And that's basically how this whole election, it's a popularity contest based on whose name is all over the news.
But I was stunned. He was, you know, it's one thing to use, you know, H and whatever. He was using the F-bomb.
I was stunned
at that.
Well, I've often wondered why they don't do it more often to get that. And remember who he's
going
after.
That emotional punch.
Know who he's going after. He's going after that the typical Republican is your angry, older, blue-collar, working-class guy. That's who he's going after. Now, the party may have a bunch of those people in it, the elites, the folks who, you know, they fly around in their corporate jets and live on their private islands, you know, basically pulling the strings of the angry, white, blue-collar, working-class people who just want somebody who's decisive, who's going to stand on principle, and they like that kind of guttural language. I've often wondered why they don't do it to get that. Did you hear what he said? I've used that word once, and when I was angry like that, I identify with that. Now, several times, a bit excessive. Now you just sound like a gutter mouth. But once for good emphasis on a good point, I wonder why you don't hear it more often. Anyway, the Democrats today, evidently they're going to take a page from Karl Rove's playbook. They have announced the formation of two new U.S. political action committees. Oh, boy. We're going to have some political action committees. Woohoo! According to Politico, Priorities USA and Priorities USA Action say they're looking to raise at least $100 million for next year's presidential election. In a memo from Bill Burton, a former White House spokesman, and Sean Sweeney, a former White House aide, they have explained that they are out to level the playing field by taking advantage of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision. They go on to say, while we agree that the fundamental campaign finance reforms are needed, Karl Rove and the Koch brothers cannot live by one set of rules as our values and our candidates are overrun with their hundreds of millions of dollars. They went on to say, we will comply with all applicable rules and laws, but we won't be boxed in by a double standard. It's kind of interesting, you know, that they've come out and said, you know, we're gonna go raise all this money. I'm going, where are you gonna get this money? There are no Koch brothers that I know of on the left. And Soros, I don't know that he's giving, I think there's one, you got Soros. But I can name off probably 10 right wingers who fund big money into these think tanks. What I was happy to see is Russ Feingold came out and said, look, why do you want to be like them? Why do we want to mirror the tactics of the radical right wing? You know, not doing our nation any favors. On one hand, I agree with Feingold, and I'm glad he said it. On the other hand, you know, it's good to win. I guess I have two thoughts on this. You want to be ideological and say, you know, we got principles and we're not going to go down that on that route. But it's another thing to say, you know, I'm going to stand on my principles and get my butt whipped.
Well, the other part is, here's the irony, Rick. If we don't go that way, at least temporarily, we risk the chance of being overwhelmed, which means that there's no way we're going to change the system. If we're going to change the system, obviously, and I know this isn't a Democrat-Republican thing, but the way the Republican Party is going right now, there is no way that you're going to get true reform if the Republicans maintain control, especially the pro-corporate Republicans. There ain't no way. So there's a bit of an irony there.
But at the end of this, no, I mean, here's my problem with this whole thing. I mean, the Democrats are now going to act like the Republicans. They're going to raise all this money, and where are they going to get it from? The same people that they're getting, the Republicans are basically getting from, big business people who have lots of money, who are going to want a corporate agenda. So you're going to have more of the same two-party system who basically agree on 90% of the stuff when it comes to corporations. You know, when was the last time you saw a real progressive agenda put out? And what's really, really frustrating is all of this money that they're going to raise on both sides, it's all going to end up in the hands of Clear Channel and Comcast. It's all going to go to the same handful of media outlets who have got us by the short hairs, who control the message, who control everything virtually everything we see, hear, and read.
And at the end of the day, you have to have people with integrity once they get in Congress to do the right thing. That's the way it is.
But can you have integrity when you have to raise, what is it, $20,000 a day to stay in office? 20 grand a day, you got to be dialing for dollars. Hey, 20 grand a day. Just to stay in office. I mean, is it possible? I mean, that's why I think things are so screwed up.
Well, I mean, we've talked about it several times, Rick, and it hasn't changed. There's going to have to be some control of the money. And the irony is the very people that benefit from the system are going to have to vote that way. That can be extremely difficult.
Anyway, Mitt Romney, I guess Mitzi's got himself in a little bind here. The New Hampshire Democratic Party has filed a complaint with the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, alleging that Mitzi used his political action committee that he set up in various states for his presidential run to fund his campaign. Here's the problem. He's not officially anything yet. He hasn't set up an exploratory committee. He hasn't done anything like that. It's illegal to use state PAC money to finance campaigns for federal office. It's illegal. So by law, candidates cannot raise money for a White House campaign until they set up this exploratory committee or a presidential fundraising committee. So he may have gotten himself into a little trouble because he's got a bunch of these these little packs give it a funneling in money. So this could be kind of interesting. Holly Shulman, communications director of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, said Romney's funneling of campaign contributions from his array of state political action committees to fund his presidential campaign reeks of an Enron-style accounting scheme. She went on to say that Romney just wants to be president, plain and simple, and he'll take any position, say anything, or do anything to get there. It's kind of interesting. So we'll see where this takes us. Will Mitzi be slapped on the wrist? And if he is, maybe he'll have enough money to buy his way out of it. Also, the Michigan Citizens United, and I'm going, really, Michigan Citizens United? Did we really need Citizens United in the phrase? Well, Michigan Citizens United, they're going to have to amass more than 800,000 signatures, or 25% of the votes cast in the Michigan gubernatorial race, in which Republican Rick Snyder won. Here's the thing: this group has they've leaped over the first hurdle at getting him recalled. The language on which the whole recall petition is based has been approved, and now it's time to move on forward. It's going to be. It says voters in Michigan can file a recall petition 6 months after Snyder's term began under Michigan law, unlike Wisconsin, where it takes a year. Under the Michigan law, the wording of the petition was put before an elections committee as Snyder's residence of record. A representative of the governor's office was not immediately available for a statement, but the language is now in place. They can move forward and begin collecting the 800,000 signatures, and I think that's a good thing. It'd be nice to see him out.
And, you know, it's unfortunate that we don't have that provision in this state. Now we have a governor for 4 years who has 4 years to do a lot of damage, and maybe we need to look at that. But to change that, we probably can we do that? Do we have to do that through a constitutional convention?
That I don't know. We should get somebody to find that out. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Smith Show.
This is beyond fabulous. It is exquisite. Donnie Trump, the flaming ego with feral hair, is drumming up a presidential run for himself. Just when you thought the GOP primary could not get any cheesier, what with Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, and others issuing sanity-curdling nonsense in a right-wing pander fest, along comes the Donald. The TV impresario and real estate huckster says that he's the man for 2012 because he has the background to run our government like a business. Whoa, Donnie, it's not nice to threaten voters. It is true that he has run several businesses right into the ground. Trump started in business right out of college with nothing but a dream, a driving ambition, and his daddy's multimillion-dollar real estate empire. He quickly turned daddy's fortune into a small one. Then he turned that into the first of his bankruptcies. But with a real talent for hype, he was able to get enough capital from Wall Street speculators, subsidies from government, and secret settlements from financial regulators to paper over his business incompetencies and improprieties. Just 2 years ago, Trump's casino operation went bankrupt, and he was tossed off its board of directors. Still, though, he has The Apprentice, his unreal reality TV show. So while Trump is not a successful businessman by a long shot, he does play one on television. And now, he wants you to help him take his cheesy act to the White House. How cheesy is he? The Donald has joined the Newt and Michelle B. in a panderfest conspiracy competition to see which one can be the most clownish in labeling Obama as a Muslim who was born in Kenya. This is Jim Hightower saying, Trump recently declared, "I'm their worst nightmare." He was referring to the Obama campaign, but he's really America's worst nightmare.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you want to email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails. Rick Santorum sent an email, you know, basically begging for money, you know, touting how wonderful he is. He laid out his, you know, his 9 to 10 point plan. I guess it's 10 points to mimic the Ten Commandments. So these are Rick Santorum's 10 commandments. This is the vision for America. This is the 10 things that he thinks are most important. Okay, here we go. He says, first, we need to begin by seeing the world the way it truly is. We need to see evil for what it is and confront it. The second thing he wants to do, of course, he wants this big missile defense system. You know, gotta have the missile defense there.
Earlier this month, the president suggested deep cuts in our military. Wrong signal, wrong effort, at the wrong time. Now is the time not only to be increasing our military preparedness, but to finish the task of comprehensive missile defense systems.
Yes. We're going to cut Social Security. We're going to cut Medicare. We're going to cut social programs. Missile defense. That's what we need. We need to restore our missile defense commitments to Poland and the Czech Republic, because they're important. They're important. His second grand plan. We need to understand we are at war, a hot war, as well as a war of ideas. Yes, we're at war, because we got to keep people afraid, even though that we're basically screwed. You know, keep it going. Third, we need to reinvigorate human intelligence apparatus. We need to reinvigorate it in the Middle East so we can better understand who and where our enemies are and then identify opportunities to counteract them. You know, like outing a covert CIA agent. That always helps reinvigorate the human intelligence apparatus in the Middle East. Always helps. So we can better understand them. You know, like understanding that Iraq had several different areas and that there were three different types of three religions there. It wasn't those Muslim people. That they actually have different sects, much like Christianity has different sects. Even though we didn't realize that before, our president didn't realize that at the time before we went in, if you remember that, Jake. His fourth one, and I love the fourth one. Rick Santorum says we need to change our information operations abroad to promote our core values. Our core values of freedom, equality, and democracy. Am I the only one who's kind of confused about the equality thing? Equality how? You mean equality in income? Equality in sexual preference? Equality exactly how, Ricky? I'm kind of missing that one. I think that was a typo. I think he meant inequality. We need freedom, inequality, and representative democracy. Okay. He goes on his fifth one. He says, we must cease, and I love this one too. This is a good one. We must cease our verbal, moral, diplomatic equivalency as between good and evil. Syria does not deserve an ambassador. Its protesters deserve support. Verbal, moral, diplomatic. Equivalency as between good and evil. Hold on. Wait a second. Number one. Remember the first thing we said? He said, we need to see the world the way it really is. We need to see evil for what it is. But down here, just a couple of lines later, we can't see the world like that anymore. Can't see it between good and evil. Is he just neurotic or stupid? Or maybe 10 different people wrote each part. Maybe Rick Santorum is Sybil. And he's got 10 different personalities who, because there's a lot of this stuff in his rhetoric. I mean, he's completely off the, what you want to talk about, say anything, do anything, here we go. Now, here's another one. Number six, he says, having supported popular sovereignty abroad, both this and previous administrations have erred in failing to sufficiently support the conditions of liberty and the instructions necessary for a successful democracy. Too often, he says, our former Senator Tricky Ricky, too often, he says, we have acted as if liberty's first order of business is a vote. Elections should be a consummation, not a commencement to democratic processes. What the hell is he talking about? the whole part of democracy is voting. I guess he doesn't get that. The whole part of a democracy is having a voice in your government. Being a participatory thing, you know? And voting is one of those actions. You know, we don't necessarily need to have elections, you know, to have a democracy. We can just appoint a guy, and that'll be a democracy in Rick Santorum's world. Isn't that amazing? Number seven, he goes on to say, we need to keep and expand our commitment to humanitarian aid, especially in Africa. Especially in Africa. And that he himself, the great Rick Santorum, the great man himself, has, as he said, I helped lead many to our efforts to address third world debt and the global AIDS crisis. And our investment has paid off. He claims that he single-handedly has saved 200 babies from dying from AIDS because they're getting all of these drugs from the big pharmaceutical companies. Very, very nice. Here's my problem with that, with number seven. Again, if you go back to the Ryan budget, you go back to the whole Republican budget thing, we need to keep and expand our commitment to humanitarian aid. That's what he says, right? But the Ryan budget strips all foreign aid out of the budget. So either he hasn't read the budget that he supported, or he is just full of it.
Latter.
Yeah, the latter. He's just full of it. Eighth, we must stand by Israel, especially at a time when it appears increasingly to be standing alone. Yeah, Israel is standing all by itself. And we have, you know, Obama, he basically turned his back on them. Oh, yeah. Didn't you know that? Completely turned his back on them. That's why they're overrun by all the countries that surround them. That's why they're under attack from Iran, and they're under attack from the Palestinians, and they're basically being attacked from all sides because nobody in the area likes them because they don't want them there. So you're seeing those attacks every day, right, Jake? The attacks are happening as we speak. Of course they're not. This ridiculous, and I hear it ad nauseum, well, we've turned our back on Israel. No, we have not. We have not. But they like to keep throwing that out there. Number
he's
nine.
He's looking for the Jewish vote.
Of course he is. Number nine, the tradition of speaking up and out about prisoners of conscience and dissent in prison, and dissidents in prison, never mind American hostages from the Middle East to Asia, need to be restored. The tradition of speaking up. We got one, you know, that Bradley Manning guy, someone who's speaking up for them, for him. This guy scares me. He scares me in so many ways. He says, finally, we need to have a nation national effort to restore the teaching of American history in our schools. It's worth remembering that Ronald Reagan's final wish in his farewell address was to ask America to instill our youth a renewed, informed patriotism. Unfortunately, we ignored this lesson. Yeah, evidently, if you listen to what he just wrote, evidently we've completely found a populace of people who are going to buy this crap. That's what's amazing to me. I mean, I look at this, and people will send him money over this. I mean, we need to see evil for what it is, and then the very next breath, well, we need to stop looking at the world as good and evil. We need to receive freedom and equality. Yet those homosexuals, they're evil, and they'll probably have sex with beasts. I mean, the guy's a kook.
He seems to be, and I remember in 06 when he went over to the deep end. But his paranoia seems to have increased since that time. He's become a sharper ideologue, if that was possible, and he had really veered to the right in 06. But you're right, I think he's just gone off the deep end.
You know, there's part of me that goes, you know, he's just looking for a paycheck. But, you know, at the end of this, he had a job working for one of those foreign policy think tanks who was, you know, paying him nice to send him out on a string and say crazy stuff and come back and collect his paycheck. I truly think the guy believes it, though. And the sad thing is there are people out there who buy into it. He scares me. He, like Palin, a very scary figure who I worry if we ever decided to put Palin and Santorum in the White House.
Well, I do believe that Santorum sees pretty much the world as good and evil. That one number you mentioned, number 7 or whatever, he said the opposite. But just listening to him, he's really paranoid. He does see the world in good and evil, and that's troubling.
Well, he says that. We need to see the world in good and evil. We need to see the evil for what it is. It's evil. I see evil. I see evil in the eyes of Rick Santorum. That's what I see evil. And his solution for energy, he had a great solution for energy.
The best way to starve the state-sponsored jihadists of resources is to produce more liquid fuels here in America.
Drill, baby, drill. That's the Republican energy policy. That's their plan. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
You know, I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. And today on Wedding Day, let's find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Victoria Jones, thanks for taking time for us.
Delighted.
So big wedding day today. I'm sure, you, like my wife, maybe you're enjoying the day.
Oh, yes, I watched it. You bet I did. I loved the dress.
I didn't see a minute of it.
Well, that's nothing to be proud of.
I honestly didn't see a minute of it. Just not my thing. But, you know, good for them. But here in the neighborhood, a lot of people upset our president didn't get to go.
Well, there was just going to be too much security.
Yeah, you know that, and I know that. But here, it's about some iPod and speeches or who knows what. But
well, there were no speeches on the iPod, and that's not the way that it works. And William and Kate were in charge of the invitations, and really could care less what gift Obama gave to his grandmother.
There you go again with your facts. There you go again. Anyway, what's going on in Washington tonight?
Well, there are plenty of things going on, but a lot of them are basically going on next week. when Congress gets back next week, you've got this interesting situation in the Senate where Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is going to have a vote on the Republican budget that passed. That's the Ryan budget, the Paul Ryan budget. The idea is to try and split Republicans, which he may be able to do. And so in retaliation, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has said that he's going to force a vote on the Obama budget, which is to try to split Democrats, which it might do. And basically, this is McConnell's tactic, and it's quite a good political tactic, that any time that Reid tries to do something like this, he is going to do the exact opposite. So that's what's coming up in the Senate. So that's going to get nobody anywhere. In the House, meanwhile, they are going to be dealing both with the debt ceiling and with energy. And on the debt ceiling, there's a very interesting idea being floated about by House Republicans. And that idea is to grant only incremental increases to the federal debt limit. The idea is to get more concessions in spending cuts and budgetary reform from the Obama administration. So you would push to expend the debt limit every 2 months, but in return, you give us this.
Well, I mean, like any good shakedown, you don't want to give away all of your collateral. First, you want to be able to hold those people. You know, you want to keep twisting their arm every couple of months to get a little bit more out of them. I get it. It's like any two-bit crook would come up with. I mean, it's a good shakedown tactic.
Well, I mean, some people are calling it that. Other people are saying that, you know, this is a good way to go, and it's a reasonable move. Freshman Republican Tim Holzkamp, Republican of Kansas, said it's the only leverage that we have over a Senate and a president that is seemingly unconcerned about the overspending.
So if you continue down this path and we keep having this argument over and over and over again, what does that say to investors? I mean, because we seem to be so concerned about investors. We seem to be so concerned about Wall Street and our bond rating and our credit rating. What's that going to do if we keep having these fights and we keep having this uncertainty every 2 months?
Well, this, you see, may be where this plan might fall down, both what you're saying and the idea of forcing lawmakers to repeat this vote that could be unpopular. Many people don't want to make it because Republicans are going to accuse them of holding hostage the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. So as you're saying, then the financial markets would be in a period of uncertainty over an extended period of time. Republicans have warned against that in the past.
Yep.
So there are problems with this plan.
Absolutely. They're coming back soon, I think Tuesday, right?
Yes, the House comes back Tuesday. I think the Senate shows up Monday.
I'll bet you they can't wait to get back to D.C., get out of their districts after the beatings they've taken.
Yes, there have been some pretty lively town halls.
And there's a congressional dinner coming up soon?
That's right. Monday night, congressional leaders of both parties will be going to the White House, and they will be talking about the debt ceiling, and I imagine other issues will come up as well. This is really quite a big step, these meetings and these dinners. You know, earlier on in the Obama administration, there really weren't any meetings with Republican leaders. And so this is, in terms of at least talking, it's a step.
Right. So I'm sure they're going to be talking about the big handouts, the welfare that we're giving oil companies.
I don't know whether that'll come up. If it does, it'll be interesting to see whether John Boehner, the Speaker, and Paul Ryan, the chair of the House Budget Committee, are in agreement in terms of their position on the tax subsidies to oil companies, because they seem to be in disagreement at the moment, with Paul Ryan saying we should end them and John Boehner having walked back his comments from earlier in the week in which he seemed to indicate we should end them and then walking back from it and saying that we shouldn't.
And then one of his spokespeople says, well, if we did that, it would raise prices.
Right. It would raise prices if the oil companies raise the prices.
Exactly. I understand the Democrats are now going to try and emulate the Republicans.
Yes, they've decided that they're going to have an outside fundraising group called Priorities USA. Hang on, is that what it's called?
Yep, Priorities USA.
Yes, Priorities USA, started by former White House aides Bill Burton, who was a deputy press secretary, and Sean Sweeney. and they're going to battle what they call the extremist right-wing efforts of Republican-leading independent groups who really spent millions to defeat Democrats last year. They want to raise $100 million for it's going to be the most expensive election in history, I think, pretty much. And they're going to have two funds, one that can work full-time to influence elections and must disclose all its donors, and another one focused on both issue advocacy and political activity that can keep its contributions secret.
So basically they stole Karl Rove's idea and have just changed the name.
Yes. Now, the White House was asked about this, and Jay Carney, the press secretary, said these are not people working for our administration, and the White House cannot control the activity of outside groups. The president's position on disclosure remains the same, i.e. what he said last fall. The American people deserve to know who's trying to sway their elections.
And lastly, before we leave, the Donald back in the little hot water?
Yeah, he said that he avoided being called to serve in Vietnam because he got lucky and had a very high draft number. But according to the Smoking Gun, that may not quite be the case. His Selective Service records say that his number, 356, was drawn in December 1969. He'd already received four student deferments and a medical deferment.
Oops. I don't know why people just don't come out and tell the truth on this stuff. Because you always get caught. Always.
Yeah.
It makes almost no sense to me. None at all. Victoria Jones, I appreciate your time. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All righty. And now find out what we got going on here in Harrisburg. What do you got for us, Jay?
Well, let me start out with a story, a nice story from Wisconsin. We've been from time to time reporting on the recall efforts out in Wisconsin resulting from the anti-union legislation that was forced upon the people of Wisconsin by a Republican governor and a totally Republican legislature. Some good news, apparently, out in Wisconsin, they've signed up over 26,000 signatures for the recall of the 6th Republican state senator, that being Robert Coles of Green Bay, who voted for Governor Scott Walker's bill to eliminate collective bargaining rights of public employees. That is, as I said, the 6th. They had about 50% more signatures than they really needed. According to the Constitution out there, to get a recall petition and have enough people signing it, you have to get the equivalent of about 25% of the total vote for governor in that senatorial district, and apparently they were wildly successful. On the other hand, the Republicans believe that they might have 3, and as of the moment, as of right now, that hasn't been validated. From what I understand, they've been having some real problems finding people to do it. They've actually hired ex-cons, and in fact, some of the actions of those ex-cons have come in question. There's some investigations.
You mean like ripping people off at the Green Bay Packers football stadium?
Well, like using questionable language and being vague about what they're signing. I think some of the people reportedly thought that they were signing a petition in favor of certain Democrats, and it wound up that these petitions were anti. There's some very, very questionable things going on out there, and obviously these investigations are going to take time, but it could wind up that the Republicans wind up having no recalls. But as of now, the Democrats have 6, and they believe they can get as many as 8, so there's good news on that front. Kind of a comical story in a sense. The governor has, and I don't know why he said that. I'm hoping he's joking. He told some of the college students who were obviously upset with him about his policies that maybe the best thing they can do is to, maybe we can do as a state is to maybe drill on state college land. Maybe we can use that money to fund some of the deficiencies in the educational system, and I'm sure Joe Paterno would be wildly in favor of having a Derrick right there at midfield there in Beaver.
That's what
Beaver
I said
Stadium.
Last night. That's what I said last night. Put it in midfield.
You know, and every time Penn State plays a football game, you'd have to kind of, you know, get the derricks out of there.
And, get the home field advantage.
Of course, we're being facetious, but the point is that the governor's ratings in the polls have kept going down and down and down. According to Terry Madonna, this is not the first governor that's had a really tough first year. He said there's only been one governor, well, probably in the last 35, 40 years in Pennsylvania, that really had a good first year, and that was Governor Thornburgh. He said, but for the most part, all the governors that have had tough first years have and done the things that were politically unpopular have gone on and been reelected. Let me give you some numbers here, the latest polls. The Quinnipiac poll this week found that 37% of voters disapprove of Corbett's job as governor, compared with 11% disapproval at the group's February 16th survey. That's tripling Corbett's disapproval rating since he unveiled his budget. Last week, public policy polling showed that among independents, Corbett has only about a 31% approval rating. In November, Corbett won the independent votes by 18 percentage points over Democrat Dan Honorato. If the polls are any indication, his support is dropping pretty quickly. Now, does that mean that he's going to be a one-term governor? Truth is, he's got a long, long way to go, and only time will tell. Some good news coming out of Michigan, Rick. The Michigan situation and the Michigan governor and the Michigan Republicans out there control everything did something a little bit different. They passed a law which allows the governor to appoint financial czars. And what has happened in the city of Benton Harbor, this financial czar has come in. He's taken over the city government. He's declared the collective bargaining agreements with the unions null and void. He's done the same thing with the school board. And now we find that perhaps there's a little bit of conflict of interest with the state rep, who has a direct tie with some of the big money people. And it seems like Benton Harbor and Whirlpool had a project out there. And Benton Harbor and Whirlpool apparently came to an impasse on this situation. Now, the tie-in with Fred Upton is that he was a former employee of Whirlpool. Whirlpool wants to buy some key property involved in this situation. It's getting messy, and out of this whole mess has come an effort to recall the state rep. Supposedly they're going to submit this to a commission, the city commission. If the city commission decides that it's proper, they will then be able to go get signatures and possibly recall this state rep. So the people in Michigan are starting to fight back. I myself had real doubts about the law. I mean, to me, it smacks of, I mean, it's coming right up against totalitarianism in the sense that what you're doing is taking away the rights of the people to vote in those who they want to represent, whether you're talking about a city council, a borough council, a township council, or a school board. The fact that someone can come in and basically ignore that vote and have complete control, to me, just isn't acceptable. So it's good to see that the people in Michigan, Rick, are fighting back. And finally, I think there's some reaction. I think the working people and the common people out there in Michigan see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope this nightmare ends soon. Let's take a quick break right back after this.
Back to America. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances are made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed, with your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy, through the absolute indifference, avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
So, Newt Gingrich was in Pittsburgh today. Yeah, he was out there for the big NRA Love Fest, the Gun Fest 2011. He said that President Obama, in every way, in every possible way, the Obama administration is the most consistently anti-gun administration and anti-Second Amendment administration that we have ever had. Yeah, because there's so many laws just flying through Congress. You know, his pen is running out of ink. In fact, he's gone through a couple of pens, just signing off those regulations. We're gonna take those rights away. But I mean, the pen is empty. It's empty with ink. Which is probably why when the T-Twizzlers had all their rallies and they were walking around with guns, maybe it was at that point that the ink was dry. That's all I can think of. I mean, and the thing is, you know, the people who went to this thing were going, yeah, and he raised our prices 500%. Raised the price of bullets, he did. That socialist, he reached his hand into the free market, and he said, bullets will now be 500% more. And he took that money, and he gave it to the Muslims. Well, isn't that the logic that they generally use?
Well, that was the logic that some of the, for lack of a better word, some of the gun wackos were using. They were saying, you can't vote for Obama because he's going to take your guns away. He's gonna increase the tax on bullets by 500%, which never happened, of course.
But you know, it's nice to have that out there. It's always nice to scare people. It's always nice because the criminals are coming. The criminals are going to be the ones who have guns. Like this stupid criminal here in California. The woman was getting out of her car, and two guys walked up to her and allegedly accosted her in her driveway. One of them evidently had a gun, according to the 44-year-old woman. who said on Wednesday night at 9 p.m. she jumped out of her car, and I put a gun up to her and said, give us your money. So she reached in her purse and gave him a couple of bucks, and the robber said, that's not enough. So she said, okay, well, let me go in the house, and I'll get you some more. She went in the house, she closed the garage door, and called the police. So, again, you go, not too bright at criminals, not too bright. You got guys robbing banks who are coming back after the fact because they left their note. I just heard the story the other day. They left the note about 20 minutes after they robbed the bank. They showed up to go get the note, and police were waiting for them.
You couldn't make that up.
No, you sure cannot. The owner of a Florida tanning salon, according to UPI, has been arrested for allegedly making secret videotapes of customers. You go into those tanning beds, and a lot of people don't want to have tan lines, so they generally go in there in the buff, if you will. And this guy was just taking the opportunity to, cop a quick video, post it on the internet. Very, very nice. You got to give him credit. Creative. Only problem is going to jail. In an interview, he said, I just like looking at pretty naked girls. And, don't we all? Then he said, well, it got out of hand. And I don't want to know what got out of hand.
He posted it on the internet.
Evidently. He said, I just like to look at pretty girls. And then it got out of hand. I don't know what it is, but I don't think I want to know.
It never dawned on him that might lead him back to him? I guess not.
Again, another one of those things to watch what you do, where you do it, and how you're doing it. Because somebody's, with the technology that we have today, who knows? Which is why I'm advocating for a whole naked society. We don't need all these clothes. Jeez, oh, man. You wouldn't have to worry about the pat-downs at the airport. You wouldn't have to worry about fashion. You wouldn't have to worry about any of that stuff. It would be disgusting and a lot of pain. I mean, it would be sad. I don't know.
So you're already rethinking that position?
Kind of rethinking that. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like a big, heavy, a big, bulky sweater. Anyway, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels said today that he is going to sign the controversial bill that will cut off funding for Planned Parenthood. And you knew we would. He said, I support this bill from the outset. And the recent addition of language guarded against the spending of tax dollars to support abortions creates no reason for me to alter my position. He has to. He has to sign this. They had to serve him up this beach ball so that he can get his street cred with the anti-abortion people. There's a chance. Who knows? There's a chance he may run for president, which would be a very scary, scary thing. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, you can go to thericksmithshow.com. It has been an interesting week. Next week looks to be equally interesting. On May 3rd, there's going to be a huge rally here in Harrisburg. The Clear Coalition's coming out with their rally for a responsible budget. They're expecting somewhere around 10,000 people to show up. That will be very, very something exciting to see. And I suggest people come down and participate. You don't see this very often. I think it's going to be an interesting event. It's 1 o'clock on May the 3rd, that is a Tuesday, 1 o'clock, so please don't be late. Maybe come a little early. I'm wondering if there'll be any vendors selling T-shirts or anything. That's what I missed about Wisconsin. There wasn't any of that. No entrepreneurs with good slogan T-shirts. Mm. Like drill my campus. Yeah, that's what the college kids should do. Have T-shirts, drill my campus.
Absolutely.
I mean, is that not the dumbest idea that you've heard? Did he say that off the cuff, or was this actually a policy decision? He goes, well, you know what? It might be a good idea, since I'm slashing your future by cutting your education, that maybe I'll endanger your health by drilling natural gas right in your campus. Maybe that's it. Anyway, that is what it is. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com is where to go. You can download the podcast there for your convenience. I hope everyone has a great weekend. We will see you back here on Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're calling like the tide and flood beneath the blood of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.